we're back. It's your favorite radio show, The Kaufman Show. I'm Dave, he's Jay, and we're here for the next couple hours. Turn on your brains. We're going to get started right away. Mr. Farrar, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, Dave?
Good. Ready to dive right in?
What? Yes. Okay, let's do this.
Last week,
what's
was,
happening?
Last week was a half an hour back and forth before I think we even went to commercial.
Well, I had things on my mind, Dave.
You did. It was Oscar week, after all.
It was. So important.
But we're going to start, and we're going to start right now. It's been a year since Patrick Burke and two other co-founders began the You Can Play initiative. And what a year it's been. So impressive to see the gains that they've made in the last year. And, of course, still so much further to go. But we figured we'd bring Patrick back onto the show and discuss where we've been at in the first year. So let's bring him back in. He's on Twitter at BurkeyYCP. Mr. Patrick Burke, hello, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Been a bit of a long day, but excited to be on.
I'm hoping this is your last interview of the day.
It better be. If my PR guy calls me again, I'm just going to fire him.
I'm trying to figure out what we can ask you that's original, because I'm figuring you've had the same 20, 30 questions thrown at you for probably since 7 o'clock this morning.
Bring whatever you want. I can answer anything.
Okay. Well, first of all, congratulations on the 1 year. And I saw earlier on Twitter that someone had congratulated you, and you made it very clear that this is just the first intermission. It's time for a pep talk and some oranges. That's it, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're very proud of where we are. I think we've done a lot of really impressive things. I'm very proud of what our charity's done, what the people who work alongside me have done. But there's a lot left to do in all the other sports, male and female sports. And there's still some work left to be done, obviously, in the hockey world. So we're happy to be at our first anniversary. We're all celebrating a little bit, but this isn't the end. This is just getting started.
For you, what has been the highlight of the past year?
I think the biggest highlight for me has been seeing the LGBT athletes that we speak with find their voice. I think the ally work we've done with NHLers has been amazing. It's been really groundbreaking in a lot of ways. But bringing in these 19, 20-year-old kids who are gay hockey players or gay runners or lesbian soccer players or whatever it might be, bringing them onto our panel and having them share their stories. And, you know, I've had a bunch of them say, oh, I've never done this before. I don't think I'll be good at it. I'm so nervous. And then we get done and they say, when can I do that again? And having these stories out there and having them become advocates for their own story and for their own benefit, I really think that, you know, I wrote an article about it that's being posted later, but people keep calling us allies. But if you're not actually allied with anyone, then can you really call yourself that?
Well, it's an ally to the cause, right?
Yeah, but the point of this has to be to encourage LGBT athletes to share their story. At the NHL level, at the amateur level, the CHL, any sports, any gender, whatever it might be. The point is to make these athletes live free of fear and let them share their stories openly. And seeing that during the course of this year, seeing young athletes coming into their own, that's been the most rewarding part of this for me, because I know over the next couple of years we're going to be able to do the same thing with professional athletes at the elite level.
Patrick, do you think that the job gets easier for you guys once someone comes out, or do you think there'll be more challenges ahead that maybe are even unforeseen?
I think the big fight that we're going to have when the first athlete comes out is if that athlete doesn't want to be a figurehead, doesn't want to be the standard bearer, doesn't want to be the voice on this issue, we're going to be there to pass block for him and keep the media and the other LGBT groups off his back as much as possible. And I think that's going to be the hard part for us, is it's going to be a media storm. And what we're gearing up for as an organization is to take the pounding of that storm so that he doesn't have to.
Patrick, we've been waiting with bated breath in Montreal for the Habs to get involved in some way, shape, or form in this campaign, whether in French or in English. We've seen, I think, Gionta and Carey Price both do parts of videos for the You Can Play campaign last year. What's up? What's coming up next? What can people in Montreal look forward to?
Well, yeah, Carey did one of our first videos. Gio has done a video that we still haven't released. We've got one cut of him with Brendan Morrill from the Stars that we're just waiting for the timing to be right to put out. But It was actually funny, you know, the Habs were in Boston last night, as some of them may have noticed.
Yeah, we heard about that game.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone paid attention to that game, but I think people might have talked about it once or twice. And it was really cool that Mark Bergman found me, went out of his way to track me down in the press box, just to pull me aside, and he pulled me aside and just said, you know, Patrick, I want you to know, we support, you know, as an organization, this is something we support. So he had been on board when the Hamilton Bulldogs did their PSA, and he pulled me aside, and I'll get the exact quote wrong, but he said, anything you need, anytime, anywhere, we're there for you, whatever you want. So from the GM on down now with the Montreal Canadiens, we know we have full support, basically carte blanche to do what we think is right on behalf of LGBT athletes. So I think the Canadian fans out there should be very proud and very happy about the leadership that they have.
How many current NHL GMs have said the same to you?
A lot of them have kind of expressed some, you know, shot me an email now or then and said, oh, you know, this is great, and have waited for me to make requests of them. We haven't had GMs really turn us down for anything. But the fact that Mark went out of his way before a big game to find me, he knew I would be there to, you know, go out of his way, find me, make sure that it was clear, make sure that it was no doubt, no hesitation. I would never have any shame about asking him for a favor. I think that's really cool and really impressive on his part.
So Mark Bergevin has basically given the endorsement of the Montreal Canadiens to you guys. The question is, what do you do with that? How do you turn that around? What's the favor that you ask him?
Well, I don't know yet. I think one of the things that a lot of people have asked us to gear up for this summer is to have athletes in various pride parades, which is something that a lot of NHL athletes, this past year, Manny Malhotra and Jason Garrison on behalf of the Canucks marched in Vancouver Pride. And I've had several NHL athletes reach out and say, hey, you know, if you want me in Chicago, if you want me in Boston, if you want me in Toronto, let me know. That might be something that we can talk about with the Canadiens. But it's just nice to know, big picture, if we want anything from the Montreal Canadiens, that we'll have access to it.
Lord knows why. I guess I must have been just killing time, but I was at the Air Canada Centre a couple of weeks ago, went into their the massive Leafs store that's in that condo across the street, and was very impressed to see the You Can Play stuff on display and for sale. Maybe that would be a starting point.
Yeah, Real Sports has done a lot of gear work with us and has taken a lot of the burden of manufacturing and selling T-shirts and this and that with us. So that might be an interesting idea that we can talk about with the Habs.
Maybe something in French as well. I know that's something that we've been waiting for a while.
The Hamilton Bulldogs PSA has a pretty significant portion. It's like the national anthem in a lot of cities. It's half French, half English.
Nice, nice. Well, then the Quebec language police won't get on it too hard, I imagine.
Yeah, am I allowed to say pasta on this interview? Or
you can say whatever you want. And if you check Twitter and see what Francois Gagnon from La Presse just said to me, we can just both establish that I will not be talking about that with you.
All right. I don't even know what that is, but okay.
Well, I think we'll just leave it at that. The one thing I want to get to, we talked about the high points in the last year. There have been some low moments, but I think that, you know, I think of things like Tu Eres Maracan on iBlack or Cam Jansen's comments. Do you look at those as low points? Do you find yourself upset when something like that happens, or do you look at it as a teachable moment?
Well, the nice thing is that we were able to turn both of those low points into something that became high points. So Cam Jansen's become a good friend and an ally. He was actually in Boston the night before he got waived. He was in Boston, and we met up and had a big talk about things he was going to do on behalf of the Devils before he got sent down. So that kind of messed things up. And with Dino Escobar and the Toronto Blue Jays, I'm going down along with a gay athlete. I'm going down in 2 weeks to address the entire Toronto Blue Jays organization. The Major League and the Minor League players, they're all going to hear a speech from You Can Play. So we've taken two negative incidents and crisis situations and turned them into scenarios where now we have friends and allies in the sports world who have learned from their mistakes and are working to make amends.
Finally, Patrick, we spoke with Craig last year from Puck Buddies, who does your PR. And one of the things that we discussed was the fact that You Can Play was so embraced in the mainstream media, but had been pretty much shunned from the gay media. Is that something that you're still dealing with?
Yeah, that still happens. We tend to, I don't want to use the word pander, but our voice speaks to the athletic community. It does not necessarily speak to the LGBT community at large. Where we are most effective is when we're in a locker room talking to athletes, gay or straight, athletes listen to us. And the at-large LGBT media is largely not concerned with sports, is largely uneducated with sports. And when we try and talk to them about issues, or I give an interview in which I accidentally swear once or twice, they tend to not be as responsive. But long-term, would I rather be good at speaking to athletes or good at speaking to the LGBT community? I'd rather be good at speaking to athletes, because that's where the work needs to be done.
Well, I know our audience loves to hear from you, Patrick, and you're always welcome to swear on our show.
I behaved the entire time tonight, I believe, and been pretty good all day, actually. I think I said crap once, and that was it.
Well, that doesn't count. Jay, do you have something for Patrick?
Yeah, just a little bit off topic, and I'm sure a question you haven't had today, Patrick. As per our conversation during the Grammys, have you done a little more research on Public Enemy yet?
I have, because that was just something where I was confused between Public Enemy and NWA. That was not me intentionally mislabeling a rap group. That was just me being somewhat ignorant of the rap world, which I'm sure comes as a shock to everyone who knows.
Yeah, and it looked like Bruce Arthur was letting you have it, too, as well. So, well, I'm glad. I'm glad you you did your research, and I'm sure Chuck D is very happy about that right now.
An honest mistake. I spent a pretty good amount of time on Wikipedia trying to figure things out, which absolutely has to be the most suburban way to find things out about rap music possible. But I did my research, and I withdrew my my comment.
And since then, a high-profile rapper has endorsed You Can Play.
Macklemore and Lewis did a great video for us live at Red Rocks. A guy who's a huge sports fan, and you know, with Thrift Shop, the number one artist in the world right now. So having him do a video was pretty cool for us.
He was on SNL last week, and in the video is sporting a Gary Payton Seattle Sonics jersey. So I'm a fan.
Yeah, he did a song for the Seattle Mariners, and one of his songs was the official song, I believe, of the Seahawks, and he was also the official song of the NBA All-Star game.
Well, onward and upward, it seems like big names keep piling on and the movement keeps growing. And as you said, so much work to do, so much time left to continue on this. But, man, what a job. And, you know, you're in law school, you're a scout for the Flyers. I don't know where you find the time to do all this, but hats off to you, man.
Well, thank you. We're like I said, we're proud of what we've done. We know there's a lot left to do, but we're ready for it. We're up for it, and this is going to be a fight and a battle that we're fully equipped to handle. So we're looking forward to 1 year down. We're looking forward to what's ahead of us.
Your brother would be very proud of you, sir.
I hope so.
Thank you so much for your time. We'll speak soon.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Have a great night.
Bye.
There he is, Patrick Burke. Follow him on Twitter at BurkeyYCP. Last time we had him on, we made a little fun of the Twitter handle.
Yeah, it's, well, he takes the ribbing.
Oh, sure.
I was, like I said on Twitter, Bruce Arthur and I were giving it to him because he mixed up NWA with Public Enemy, and so I just wanted to know if he did his research on it, and he did, and he was making fun of himself as well a little bit. So
I think that one of the most original people in hockey deserves a nickname befitting the man, not one of the least original nicknames in hockey.
But it is a hockey nickname, isn't it?
Incredibly so.
It's the hockey-ish nickname you can ever think of. Just take the last name, put a Y at the end of it.
Or an I-E in this case.
Yeah.
Don't follow him at Burkey, BurkeyYCP.
Okay, yes. Sorry.
Let's bring in our next guest. We're going to keep this rolling right now. He writes for the Montreal Gazette. You can read his Pop-Tart blog. He's also a very well-known gay activist in this country. We've had him on the show before, and the topic isn't going to change too much from the last time, but it's a pleasure to welcome back Richard Burnett, Bugs Burnett, to the show. Hello, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very good. How are you?
Not too bad. Really nice to hear Patrick talking on your show here tonight.
Yeah, he's, you know what, he's just a great person, and he does wonderful work, and he was on an earlier program on the station today, and I'd have him on again tomorrow.
He's a good talker, and it's, you know, it's It's a year, but it feels like 100 years already. I got to tell you, man, I can't believe it's only just a year.
See, that's interesting, and I'm happy to get your perspective on that, because I feel much more removed from the situation than I guess you do.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just a big sports fan to begin with, and Patrick was saying that, you know, a lot of the LGBT media, gay media just hasn't been very receptive to You Can Play, but I know a lot of gay people who are really into sports, and they know everything about this organization. So I got to give a tip and a hat to Patrick Burke and the other You Can Play co-founders, Brian Kitts and Glenn Whitman. They've done just a tremendous job, and congratulations and happy anniversary.
I'll tell you, Bugs, that was in response to my question asking about a conversation that we had last year with one of his PR people, saying that they've had a lot harder of a time breaking in through the gay media, that the straight media has embraced this story, but that they find a lot of trouble getting support from the other side.
Well, I would think the target audience would be the straight media to begin with in the first place. I mean, I think one of the linchpins of You Can Play is really to create straight allies. And I think the more straight heterosexual athletes come out really in support of their gay teammates, I think that's really going to be the big difference.
And of their potential gay teammates, which leads us to what I wanted to discuss with you tonight, which was last week's NFL Combine.
Ugh.
Exactly.
Ugh.
Now, I would imagine that there are several laws in place against asking a potential employee if they're gay.
Yeah.
But nothing wrong with asking them if they like girls, right?
Well, you know, I mean, like the NFL, as we said, it's going to investigate this. I call it the improper questioning of by team reps about the sexual orientation of collegiate players. I mean, the questions were like, do you have a girlfriend? Are you married? Do you like girls? And Nick Cassa was telling us ESPN. Denard Robinson and Michigan State running back Le'Veon Bell, they were making similar claims to other media. If these kind of questions were asked at a job interview by any Fortune 500 company, it would be illegal. I mean, this type of questioning, for me, I call it this type of screening, is
right.
Not just immoral, it is against the law. And I think the league should contact Cassa and the other players immediately, and they should follow up with a very specific question: which teams asked you those questions? Unfortunately, the damage has already been done. If any players out there were thinking about becoming the gay Jackie Robinson, I mean, the NFL effectively forced these kids back into the closet.
Right, which is terrifying. And I think you're the only sports journalist out there who has interviewed every NFLer who has come out of the closet.
I think almost all of them, yeah, man.
Well, first of all, that's very impressive, but you would think that these guys must be just up in arms right now, knowing the courage it took for them to come out after their careers, and knowing that these guys, like you said, being forced into the closet before their careers have even started.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Wade Davis was in Montreal this past weekend. He was a speaker at the Massamatti Black LGBT Film Festival here in Montreal. He was speaking at the Imperial Theater Saturday night, and he was talking about how difficult it was to maintain his quote-unquote straight cover in the NFL. I mean, Davis even spent his entire first paycheck at a strip club with all the other guys on his first NFL team. That cover, pretending to be straight, what's happening at the NFL Combine. If any of these players, like I said, were thinking about coming out, the NFL effectively closed that door down. And that kind of questioning tells these young players that you won't get a contract with our team if you're gay. It also reinforces like the prevailing notion that you're not going to get that big corporate advertising contract
right.
if you're a gay athlete. And it, you know, this all also makes me think about Notre Dame linebacker Manti Te'o.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend hoax. And I'm not saying Manti Te'o is gay, but clearly the elephant in the room is that teams want to know whether or not he is gay. And if a player is gay, NFL teams want to know what they might be getting into if he is.
See, that's a tough one, though, Bugs, because when it first came out, when the story first, you know, started unraveling, the Te'o girlfriend hoax or whatever it was, the people who said, oh, well, he must be gay and this is his cover, were tarred and feathered.
Mm.
because that supposedly isn't the, and again, I didn't think, my mind didn't go there, but I remember we had a caller, Jay.
Yeah.
Who called in and said
who
that.
Who suggested
and,
that
yeah,
right away.
And
we
I,
were suggesting that he's just stupid.
Right.
But, you know.
Well, you know, he might be both.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> Not mutually exclusive, you're saying.
Well, you know, the first thing that went through my mind is, like, no straight person I know goes jumps through hoops like that. I mean, you know, just straight people don't – it's gay people do this crap all the time. Closeted – may I make the point? Closeted gay people do crazy things to maintain the closet. I'm not saying Teo is gay or isn't gay. I'm just saying I looked at that, and the first thing that went through my mind is, my God, what the hell is this guy doing? I was like, my God, is he that afraid? Does he really want that NFL contract so bad that he's willing to do anything to be straight? So to pretend he's straight? And so, I mean, yeah, this is where we're at. And this whole combine thing just kind of reinforced this behavior. It's pretty sad.
We're in conversation with Richard Burnett on The Kaufman Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Bugs Burnett. Richard, how does a group like You Can Play combat this kind of hatred at the high levels that it's at? It's one thing to get the athletes on board and get the teammates on board, but when the guys who are writing the checks basically say that you're persona non grata, how does one deal with that?
You know, and again, I'm going to go back to Wade Davis, who's now on the board of You Can Play, the advisory board, and basically his message in a nutshell is, we need more straight allies. The question is not when a gay athlete will come out, a big-time gay athlete, but when will big-time heterosexual baseball, football, basketball, hockey players come out and say, I'm against homophobia, and I want all straight people to join me against this. As far as Davis is concerned, that's when the real change will come. As we heard with Patrick Burke earlier on your show this evening, there seems to be some serious inroads happening within the NHL. But you look at what's happened in the NFL in the last couple of weeks, and I'd have to say that, you know, it ain't happening in the NFL.
Right, like going back to the Super Bowl and the that reserve player on San Francisco's comments about not wanting a gay teammate in the shower and all the rest of that.
Yeah, you know, and the Baltimore Ravens linebacker, Brendan...
that had Chloe write
who
the...
Who has been so outspoken about his support for gay civil rights in the United States. He's just asked, this is the kind of stuff... If everybody in the league stood up and did what Brendan was doing, I think it would actually quite make a big difference.
Yeah, Chris Cluey from the Minnesota Vikings, the punter, who took up, I think it was Brandon Abandaheo or something along those lines, his cause, which was for gay marriage and equality in Maryland.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Cluey wrote that famous note talking about how having a gay teammate doesn't turn you into a lustful cock monster.
Oh, man.
It's always nice to be able to say those words on the radio.
Well, you're quoting, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
it's newsworthy.
Okay.
It's newsworthy.
It's in context.
Bugs, when are you going to come into studio and talk some baseball with us?
Oh, I can't wait. Love baseball. I'm glad to see it. It's about time it's all back.
Well, I don't know if it's coming back. We got some time before that happens. We'll be discussing on the show tonight. There was Rich Griffin, the former Expos PR guy, who now writes for the Toronto Star, wrote a blog this week.
Yeah, I know. It's about Ottawa being a better baseball town than Montreal.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. if there isn't, hasn't been more of a wake-up call to Montreal to get it together, I'd like to see how people react when people hear the story that the nation's capital, Ottawa, Canada, population 3 people, sidewalks roll up at midnight, is a better baseball town than Montreal.
Okay. That's like a big ouch. That just breaks my heart. But, you know, I don't know if Major League Baseball is coming back to this city in our lifetime. But my fear is that if we do bring in a double or triple A team in Montreal, then we can just pretty well kiss our chances for big league ball to come back here. Goodbye.
I think we could very safely have some rich investor come along and build a stadium for AAA or AA baseball in Laval or the South Shore, and that would not affect construction in Montreal in 25 years for a stadium.
Oh,
but
it's
got to start somewhere. It's got to start somewhere. Yeah. So please do come into studio once spring has sprung and the grass has grown, and we'll talk some ball.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show tonight, man.
Bugs, appreciate your time as always. Thanks
all right.
So much.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Follow him on Twitter at Bugs Burnett. Very interesting follow. And his Pop-Tart blog off MontrealGazette.com is fantastic. And once again, you know, we offer nothing but support for the You Can Play project and everything that they do.
Right. It's amazing what the NFL and these collegiate teams are doing with the questionnaire. I know,
scary, man, scary stuff.
I know, yeah. Well, I know when I'm hiring somebody and I've got them in for an interview, to even ask their age, you're not allowed to do that.
Really?
Yeah, you can't even ask their age.
Wow.
I mean, I do. Because I want to know what I'm getting into.
Right, right.
You know, what? Guilty, you know, I mean, whatever. But imagine. But you know what the kind of questions they were asking? If the guy was really gay, he could still answer them. Do you like girls? Sure, I like girls just fine.
Yeah,
girls,
sure.
Girls are great. You know, are you married? Well, maybe I am, or maybe I made a trip to Vermont. I don't know.
Do you like girls? Yeah, Lena Dunham's fantastic.
Yes.
That show is super.
So you can still ask it answer with truth, you know, and not be a liar.
But not the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Right. Right.
Oh, help me God.
Oh, boy.
It was fun. I'm really happy to discuss important issues like that. And our congratulations to the Burke family and everybody else involved at You Can Play.
It's only a matter of time.
That's
it's
right.
only a matter of time. And if it's, you know, if you're still going to fight and fight and fight, well, you can use time on your side and wait for that redneck old school generation to die off.
I hate to
do us all a favor.
I hate to be as simplistic as grow the hell up.
Yeah.
Grow the hell up.
Well, no, that's what it is.
Grow the hell up. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to talk some hockey with Brian Wild from CTV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Wild Man.
I didn't know.
A little late night surprise, Jay.
Okay.
We'll be back.
You know the nighttime now. Holiday. Is the right time.
Holiday.
To be.
Holiday.
With the one you love now.
Holiday.
And I hope it
is.
Holiday. And I come on.
We're back. It's the Kaufman Show. How about that hockey game last night, Jay?
How about it?
You know, I'm looking forward. We have a caller who calls in most weeks. His name is Ron.
Ron.
And Ron last week called in and said that the Canadians were in for the week from hell, that they were going to lose to the Leafs, that they were going to lose to the Penguins, that they were going to lose to the Bruins. I hope that
Ron is wrong.
And I hope that Ron calls back in and...
You can't spell wrong without Ron.
That is true. That is true, but you know what?
I'm just giving it to Ron
for no
reason. You
screwed yourself, though. What happens when Ron's right? What are we going to do with that now? You better come up with some good wordplay for that one.
Oh, I'll figure out something. I'm a smart guy.
All right. Well, let's just dissect the game and dissect the last week and see what lies ahead. This is, you know what? Everybody talked Habs today. It was a 24-hour news cycle of Canadien, Canadien, Canadien. And the one person that I wanted to hear from, we're bringing on to the Kaufman Show right now. It's Brian Wild from CTV News. Hello, Brian.
Hey.
How are you, man?
I'm well.
Good.
I think Jay's on fire.
Yes.
It's a
yes,
Monday night. Jay's,
I am.
Jay's
on
always
fire.
On fire.
No, particularly.
Well, I mean, I think, and I'm looking forward to getting Jay's take as well. We're going to go with yours first, Brian, but the shenanigans from yesterday. Where do you, assuming that there is a fence and that there is a side of that fence that's in the United States and the side that's in Canada,
yeah.
Where do you stand on this right now, Brian? Come on, out with it.
Well, I mean, I guess where I stand is I understand that both sides are always going to play that game. They're always going to angle. They're going to always look for the call down the line. They're always going to be doing that kind of thing, and both sides do it. Right now, Michel Therrien gets to take the high road, doesn't say much, because he was the winner of last night's game, whereas Claude Julien is angling like crazy. The whole organization. See, a lot of times people think these things are haphazard, you know, that it just happened, that the guy couldn't stop himself, and he suddenly he started talking. No way. GMs and coaches, they gather, they decide how they're going to attack something. I mean, we're watching 24CH right now, and on RDS, and that series where you're getting inside. And the thing I get out of that series is so much of what they do is calculated. Michelle talks with his assistants. What are we going to say to them in the mission? Are we going to go at them hard? Are we going to go at them soft? Are we going to point out all of their flaws or let them go? Are we going to hammer them for 6-0 against Toronto? Are we going to let it slide because we don't want them to get... I mean, it's all thought of. So Claude Julien, when he comes out there, it's only 10, 15 minutes after the game. They've already had a 5-minute meeting about it. What should we do? How do we want to approach this? And they decide that what they're going to try to do is manipulate the situation for the future. Talk about embellishing a lot and see if they can get some calls. Boston Bruins are the most penalized team in the league, I think, or close. I saw some numbers on it today, and the Montreal Canadiens have had the most power plays. So, you know the way they don't want it to go, right? They want to get away with everything, so they're going to bitch about embellishing. It only makes sense, and it's only natural, and I don't fault them for it. That's just the way it goes. They're always going to try to angle the refs, the league, everyone. They're smart.
And it makes for great...
it makes for awesome theater.
Exactly.
It's been fantastic. I've had a blast today reading everything. There's a video out there that's hilarious.
Yes, embellishing.
All the time. This is great stuff. And Jack Edwards, I mean, he's fantastic in that he just plays right into it. I don't know if he's like the greatest actor in this theater or the dumbest, but whatever, it's fun. You know? It's fantastic theater when he goes crazy like that. When he says, get up! Tim Roman Hammerlick. You know, this is fabulous stuff.
And Milbury standing up for the Habs. I mean, it's
sure.
Like we're living bizarro world.
Absolutely. But you know what we get out of that? Out of all of it, we get entertained. And
yes.
That's what this is. This is entertainment. And when you finish that game and then Claude comes out there and says that and Lucic says what Lucic says, completely forgetting that he's, you know, been accused of assaulting women. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, but that's not on the ice, Brian. Come on.
No, I know. That's what I mean. That's what's hilarious about it. The glass house scenario that he's living in.
Exactly.
You know, and that's great theater, too.
But
it's all fantastic.
But it's the glass house of the entire league. That's what bothers me about this.
How so?
It's that Julien can sit there and talk about the Canadians embellishing and the Canadians doing this and the Canadians doing that. It is rife across the National Hockey League.
Sure.
And he was the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. He was sitting with a Habs logo behind him at a press conference doing the same type of bitching.
Of course. Of course.
So are their memories short or are our memories short? I don't know who's at fault here.
Well, I don't think anybody's memory is short. I think, you know, I got somebody that gave me a mention on Twitter only moments ago, and he said, wouldn't it be great if Claude Julien finished that clip and he kind of looked at the camera and gave a wink? You know what I mean? Sort of like, hey, we all know what I'm doing here.
He might as well
have.
It's
a great comment because it's the exact truth. If I walked up to him, and I know Claude very well, and Claude has been great to me. I mean, there was a game after one of the playoff series where Mark DeMore and I, the cameraman, are putting our equipment away, and Claude drives by. It's raining. He has absolutely no reason to talk to me at that point. And he stops, and we talk for like 45 minutes at 1 in the morning. That's who Claude Julien is. That's the kind of guy he is. He knows what he's doing. He's very kind and open with everyone. He's good to people. I mean, I'm just, at that moment, game 7 of a playoff series, or game 5, I can't remember which one it was, but we're in Boston at the TD Garden. He doesn't have to give me any attention. He can just drive right by. But that's who he is. He's that kind of guy. He's a good guy. But he's playing the role of the Boston Bruin coach who bitches about the Montreal Canadiens speed and skill level and power plays, and knowing that he's the Boston Bruin coach who needs to not be called for that when they're skating away from his players.
He's also the head coach of a Boston Bruins team that lost to a Habs team that had given up 7 goals the night before, mm-hmm. had their backup goalie in, were playing mm-hmm. on the road in mm-hmm. a very unfriendly environment. Right.
Night up, absolutely.
So all of this was
absolutely.
I think there was a part of this where I think the Bruins were genuinely surprised,
and
maybe they looked at it as a letdown,
absolutely.
And took the Habs for granted last night.
I don't know if they took him for granted, but I think what you get is the more that Claude is going to say that kind of thing, and the more that kind of thing happens across the organization, the more you can say to yourself as a Montreal Canadian fan, if you are, or a media member as I look at it, and I would say, this tells me when they go to that length to try to get out a message right after the game that they're afraid of what the Montreal Canadiens can do to them. They wouldn't need to do anything like that. They wouldn't need to say any of those things if they weren't afraid of that the Montreal Canadiens could actually beat them in a series, be better than them in the regular season, finish ahead of them in the standings. If they weren't worried about any of those things, they would just go, whatever. But no way. This was a team riding a six-game winning streak, facing a team that had a point in 10 straight, and they looked at it, and that moment is, after it finished, wow. They had nothing going for them that night, and we still lost to them. They had their backup. They traveled. They played an overtime game that had so much energy against Pittsburgh, they shouldn't have had any energy left.
Right.
And we lost to them? That just tells me that they have a reason to be afraid of how that went. And they tried their tactics that work usually. They tried the intimidation. They tried the bullying. You know, and what's interesting, too, from the viewpoint of how smart they are, is when the attention went to the embellishment, and that's all we've talked about today, is Marchand's embellishment versus P.K. Subban's embellishment, and the Boston media forgets that P.K. does it, and the Montreal, or you know what I've got
right.
backwards.
Vice versa, yes.
Vice versa, yeah. But they forget each other's malfeasance. But what you end up realizing is that we've talked about embellishment the entire day, and we completely didn't talk about that Zdeno Chara might be actually crazy. He might be a lunatic. When you look at his face when he's trying to beat the crap out of a guy that's on his knees, covering his face, not interested in fighting, has a plate in his head, and he looks like Jack Nicholson from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Here's Johnny.
He looks crazy. He's half crazy, this guy, which is fantastic because it's a wonderful hockey skill to be half crazy.
Well, yeah, but you don't want to be on the ice against half crazy.
No, especially when that half crazy guy's allowed to fight. He's got a weapon like a stick. You're on your knees, have already cried uncle, and he's still beating the crap out of you. And he's 6'9", almost 300 pounds. That's some scary stuff. And he's got this look on his face that says, I've lost it. And we're not talking about that at all. There's a little bit of brilliance from Julian and Chiarelli in that too, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Brian. I mean, he also alluded to the fact that he pegged Chara as a hero for what he did, mm-hmm. and said he stood up for his teammates. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's fine, you know, but I think maybe there might be a bit of a fragility in the room right now where he's trying to redirect.
Absolutely. And you know what? As soon as you said all of that, when it gets so far away from reality in a moment like that, I always go back to what I think Fox News does. I think Fox News, as a news organization, says, let's say something so incredibly absurd that when we say just normal absurd, everybody thinks, hey, that might be true. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Sure.
So if you just get to the nth degree, then the letters A through M seem plausible. And I think sometimes that's what happens. And it could happen last night because you're right. You're right to talk about the embellishing, not talk about the crazy man on the ice that you know, if you saw him on a street, you just run.
Well, you'd cross it.
You could.
Yeah.
And those things we're not talking about at all. And to say that Zdeno is a hero for protecting his mate, I mean, that's classic Fox News stuff, isn't it?
That he was a hero for protecting... You see, it's a tough call, though, Brian, because... I mean, I heard Chris Nyland on the radio earlier today saying the Habs wish they had someone to stick up for guys like that.
Well, you know what? I spent this whole day on Twitter, and when I was watching the game last night, I spent my whole consciousness thinking about that the Canadians have always been, you know, through decades, even back to the Flying Frenchmen, just to the speed team. And the Bruins always selling the fists. I mean, when I go to the TD Garden in Boston for the playoff series, when CTV allows me to travel in the playoffs, I mean, you just look at the scoreboard and the visual presentations they do at commercial breaks before the game starts, like their montage before the game starts. They've had some of the greatest hockey players in the history of hockey. Bobby Orr is basically in there once, flying through the air on the goal against St. Louis. You know, Phil Esposito was in there scoring once. I think Rick Middleton scores once.
Whole lot of Stan Jonathan, though?
And then, exactly. And then there's, like, Cam Neely pounding the crap out of each somebody 15 times. Cam Neely was a great goal scorer, maybe one time. And absolutely, it's just fisticuffs and huge hits. And, I mean, they sell that. That's how they sell hockey there. So it's no wonder that that style that they play is loved, that they embrace it, that they make it a part of themselves, and that when the game ends and the fast team beat them, they try to make sure that the fast team is punished for being fast. But with that said, isn't there a moment during the game when you're going, oh, man, if the refs don't call this way, how afraid, how intimidated are the Montreal Canadiens going to be? And so halfway through the game, I'm thinking, man, they're just not big enough. They're not tough enough. This is a scary world. Lucic is scary. Chara is scary, man. They've got some scary players. And there's, I mean, Prust, what a hero. You know, as Carey Price likes to say, steal balls.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, this guy. He'll take on anyone. And he's not a heavyweight. But he is a pretty good fighter. But he's not a heavyweight. So does the team need to have more grit? You're watching the game and you're saying the team needs more grit. Look at this. The team has to be tougher. They're not tough enough. They're getting intimidated. And you say that. And that's what your thought is the whole game. And then you realize that you have to provide, as a media guy, cogent arguments for your point. And where's my cogent argument? They won.
Right.
They won in Boston.
They're in first place.
I don't have a cogent argument to stand on except for actually watching the game and going, holy crap, are they ever intimidating. That guy's huge and crazy. That other guy's a bit of a lunatic, too. But who won the game? Who's in first? How much more sandpaper do they need? Now, last year, Marc Bergevin said that he definitely, when he looked at his roster, when I talked to him at Christmas, he said he needed more grit. He needed more sandpaper. He went out and he got it. Everyone agreed last year the Montreal Canadiens were an incredibly easy team to play. The word soft was thrown around a lot. Everybody came to Montreal and said, okay, easy night. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that Prust has added something. White doesn't know what he's doing right now because he's so upset about the two times he blew it where he was the instigator. He's so afraid of being the instigator right now. He doesn't want to be caught doing it again. But White will come back. He'll figure it out. Moen, regularly a tough guy, regularly a guy who'll throw him and at least stand up for himself. And no one has announced what it was last year. It was always called an upper body injury, and nobody knows exactly what it is. But I have a theory that it was concussions, and that's why he won't fight again. Because he has that concussion that kept him out for a long time.
Makes sense.
And I can't prove that, but I have a pretty good feeling that's what it is. I've kind of read through the lines a couple times on what people have said. And if that's the case, that makes perfect sense. He's got to stick to hockey. Because for him to do what is expected of him in that role, that's basically just being Emelin. You know, because if he gets a concussion, look at Rene Bourque. Rene Bourque is out of the lineup right now because Colton Orr sucker punched him. He stood up for a teammate. He wasn't even ready to fight yet. He came in with his gloves on and tried to pull somebody away, and Colton Orr sucker punched him. The fight had not begun. He was just coming in to take a guy away from a skirmish, and boom, he takes one in the face. He's gone. He's on IR. The Canadians don't know when he's coming back. So what happened to Bourque, if it happens to Moen, look out. It's big trouble. So he's got to be careful. White's confused. So they basically only have Prust. However, those guys can, at least White can come back. And
Prust is doing a yeoman's job right now.
He sure is, but he's by himself, and that's a little scary. But when you say all of that, as far as sandpaper and grit and everything, you just come back to the point that they're winning hockey games.
Right.
You know? And as much as it feels as if they're getting intimidated, the bottom line is who won the game. So I don't know. I know when I watch it how I feel. You know what I mean?
Totally. And
but when the result is finished, I'd make a lousy lawyer trying to prove it.
But I think part of that is just that we've all, as Habs fans or media or just Montrealers who listen to Habs talk on a day-in, day-out basis, we're trained right now. Mm-hmm. It's been a very long time since the team has played consistently mm-hmm. at a level like this. And speaking from just for myself, this completely surprised me, Brian. Never would you have gotten me to predict that the Habs would be in first place at this point in the season.
Listen, when Réjean Tremblay predicted that the Montreal Canadiens were going to finish first and win the Stanley Cup, I mean, we all laughed at him.
Right.
We all thought he was the biggest boob out there. Well, so far he's right. And as far as there were, I think I read about 40 predictions from media members, and I predicted that they were going to make the playoffs on the last night of the season. You know, one of those very tight and they just sneak in moments.
Man, they'd really have to tank for that to happen.
Exactly. But, hey, I'm in the minority, but besides Réjean and I, everyone else at 10th, 9th, 13th, 15th, which was the more logical prediction.
Yeah, because how often do you really see a worst-to-first scenario?
Very seldom. But look at the other division. Got Anaheim in second in the other conference. So, you know, the season is short and it's rapid and it's a little crazy, and crazy things have been happening.
Yeah, but who knew that Saku Koivu would turn into a 25-year-old with a healthy knee?
Absolutely. You know, but I mean, when you look at the Canadiens and what they're doing now, I actually feel, compared to when they were first under Guy Carbonneau a while back, that this Montreal team plays much more like a team that could find success in the playoffs. That team under Carbo was wide open. They played offense. Their defense was not that good. And they were number one in the league on the power play, which seems fantastic. But that's a regular season stat, because there are about three, generally speaking, power plays fewer per game as soon as the playoffs start. So it's the five-on-five teams that generally do well in the playoffs. It's not the power play teams. It used to be the other way around. But they put the whistles away so badly. And the Canadiens of this year, compared to that, play defense first. They're getting the, on a good night, don't count Pittsburgh, and even don't count last night. But in the other nine games that they've been on this 11-game rule, they're basically allowing only about 7 to 10 scoring chances per game, which is really low. And they've been outshooting their opposition in the first period on average like 14 to 5 or something like that, which is phenomenal. Just phenomenal numbers. And overall 40 to 27, 35-25 in that area, which is, again, phenomenal. So just the tenor of the game, especially 5-on-5 hockey, and the way they roll four through lines, they have a very good chance of being a solid, solid playoff team, too. I really believe it. And I didn't really believe that under Guy Carbonneau.
Couple of minutes. We got a couple of minutes left with Brian Wild. Follow him on Twitter at bwild with an ECTV. Brian, I have not heard you sound this happy in a professional context in a long time.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, the last time you were in studio with us, I think the lockout was still going on. You and Francois. Oh, no, it was, you and Francois were in studio.
Yeah, the lockout was going on, and then we segue to Newtown.
That's, so, yeah, oh, there you go. Night. But also, I mean, since we've become friends, you've been covering a crappy hockey team.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And right now you're not. And I think that much as the way that you would see it in the room, that the room is probably a lot happier, and the guys at intermission when they're hanging out waiting for the second period to start are much happier. You sound much happier.
Well, Dave, you know, I mean, I always have this as the sentence I tell everybody when they always ask, Brian, are you a fan? And I always answer the same way. I always say I'm a fan of my better life. And it's a better life. It's a better life to be a part of a team that doesn't absolutely suck. I don't even need first. I just need competitive. And last year, when they're 15th, and every moment you have to go into the room and look at those guys, and Josh is there every day, and you look at Josh and go, hey, buddy, how you doing? So you got a second? Yeah, sure, Brian. So, Josh, you guys really suck. You know, I mean, it's just too much after a while, right? So when they're actually playing well, it's more entertaining. And then bottom line, when is my life best? Well, when they make the playoffs and I get to travel. And I travel the whole way. So if they go to the Stanley Cup Finals and I'm there, hey, that's good fun. So am I a fan? A little bit. It'd be a lie to say I wasn't, because I'm a fan of my better life. And when they're competitive, it's a better life.
I understand completely. And I see no shame in being a fan as well. I don't. You can do your job objectively. We know that you can do your job objectively.
You know where I think it actually, I don't like it?
Where?
Believe it or not, it's not with praise, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite. Now, you're going to think that a guy, if he says he's in the media and he says he's a fan, you're going to think that, on the surface, you're always going to say, well, there's a guy who's just going to be effusive in his praise and it's going to be annoying. But the truth is, where it actually comes out, where you hear more fandom from a media member, is the opposite of that, where he's so much of a fan, he's frustrated when they're not playing well, and he becomes hypercritical. Do you follow?
I do. I follow. I hear it a lot, and I think it makes for interesting radio sometimes.
That's actually what annoys me about a media member being a fan.
Huh.
And I am always very wary of that, and I try to remain not so much objective in the positive that I say, but I try to be more objective in the negative I say, because that's where you hear a media member who's supposed to be objective turns into a fan and then suddenly says Carey Price is a crap goalie because he has a bad night. No, Carey Price is not a crap goalie. He had a bad night, and you're a crap reporter. That's the way I view that moment when the media fanboy can't handle himself because he's so frustrated that his team didn't win.
Well, you, sir, are a great reporter, and we always appreciate
you,
speaking with you. Brian, thank you so much for that.
Great to be on your show, and you know what? It'd even be greater to be on not after a Toronto Maple Leaf post-game show.
Yeah, how about that,
on a
huh?
Montreal radio station.
How about
just
that?
Just my little point of view of that.
John, clip that, please. Clip that. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, we got that. Yeah.
It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Why don't you mention that down press row next home game?
You know, you mean like after Toronto Maple Leaf road game, we might hear some Montreal radio?
That would make sense.
It would make sense to me, that's for sure.
The only Toronto I talk about on this show is the Blue Jays, all right?
You know what? And I'm a total bandwagon hopper there. I can't wait.
Brian, thank you so much.
Cheers.
We'll speak soon.
All right.
Brian Wild from CTV. One of the best around. And go Habs go. It is weird hearing some Leafs talk on this station.
Yeah.
It confuses me greatly.
Yeah, it's a little awkward in the car on the way in.
Leads to some awkward tweeting, like, tune in after the Leafs postgame show for the Kauffman Show on TSN 690. You're home for the Habs. What? Jimmy, before I get in trouble, play some music
for
me.
I think you already are.
Am I?
Yeah.
With who?
I don't know. We'll see. Check your email.
There we go. Okay, Expos still aren't back.
No, not yet.
There's a constant refresh going. I figure save the Expos at hotmail.com.
Constant refresh.
We'll get the...
It's going to be a long time. It's going to be a hell of a refresh.
Not as long for Ottawa, apparently. When we get back, we're going to discuss a blog that came out today out of the great town of Ottawa, talking about the great city of Montreal. It was titled, Ottawa Tops Montreal as Baseball Town. And when I saw it, I threw up a little. Anyways, we'll talk about it, and we'll talk about Rich Griffin's comments and what we can do to get ourselves together and maybe be a little better than Ottawa. What's up, Ottawa, Jay? They were our AAA team.
They were.
And now they're ahead of us.
They are. They are.
Sad realities. This is the Kauffman Show. John Kakalakis has a sports update, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kauffman Show, Hour 2, Fun first hour, eh, Mr. F?
Yes. That was a lot of guests.
It was. Wide open country from here on out, my friend.
Yes. Distinguished guests.
As always.
Yes.
As always.
Get the best, Kaufman.
Head on to the kaufmanshow.podbean.com. I dare you to find a mediocre guest. They do not exist on the
no.
show. It just don't happen, man. One of last week's guests. Was it last week that we spoke with Max Kerman from the Arkells? What a show on Friday night.
I'm sorry I missed it.
I'm sorry you missed it, too, but we brought the after party to you.
Yes, and it was nice to meet Max in person.
And hang out with Nick, as always.
Yeah, classy guys. Classy guys. We had a lot of fun.
Now, Nick, might as well air our laundry on air. Nick wants to know if you'd like to be in the Arkells Baseball Fantasy, in their fantasy league this year.
They have a fantasy league.
Yes, I performed quite poorly in it last year, but I have been invited back.
Okay.
And they wanted to know if you'd like to manage a team as well.
Manage a team?
Yes.
Okay. I'm
You're not a fantasy baseball guy?
I'm not a fantasy anything guy. I have fantasies.
Right.
But that's a whole different part of my life. You know what? I've been wondering about it. And I said, you know what? I'm following baseball more and more nowadays. And I thought, being a part of a fantasy league is a good way to really start getting it and pique your interest a little bit, and you start wondering about other teams. You know, I've been following the Blue Jays. I've been watching some spring training and so on. So I'm ready to get my life back together, and I think a good way to start is to get involved in your Arkells Fantasy League. So send me the information, and I'll see what I can do.
All right. I will make sure that your name gets forwarded along, and we will go head-to-head this year. So you better come up with a clever name, because I'm already working on some in my mind.
How many guys are in this Fantasy League?
I think there's 10, 12.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes beyond the Arkells. Maybe the Tragically Hip or Rush.
The Bare Naked Ladies. Rush is in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Brian Adams.
No Nickelback.
Filling
though.
It out. Nickelback's not
it's
invited.
It's Nickelbackless.
How come Nickelback is never invited? Don't understand.
Well,
poor
it's
guys.
Called a No Nickelback League. I mean, come on.
Right. Okay.
So our thanks again to Arkells for coming to Montreal and showing us a good time. And great show. If you missed it, then get to the next one.
Yes.
It was superb. They know how to do it. And in the meantime, the next big one got announced today. The Hip are coming to town.
They are.
About damn time.
Right in my neighborhood, near the Lachine Canal.
That's right. June 22nd.
On St. Patrick Street.
On St. Patrick's Street on St. Jean-Baptiste weekend. And there's nothing that screams St. Jean-Baptiste quite like a Tragically Hip concert.
Right. What's June 22nd?
I'm happy we let that sit there for a
yeah,
second.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah.
June 22nd is
It's a
what?
Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something else I'm going to miss.
Oh, man. Hey, maybe we'll be 5 nights a week by then and you won't have to miss it.
Okay. Let's hope.
It's not that far away.
No, that's why I'm pretty sure I'm going to miss it. Let's be honest.
Oh, man. Let's go to the phones. 514-790-1690. 1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. Let's go to George in St. Lazare. Hello, George.
Hey, how's it going, Dave?
Great, man. Hey, how's it going on, man? What's going on?
Life is beautiful being a Habs fan.
La vita è bella.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I haven't been excited so much about the team since the Halak 53-game performance during that Stanley Cup run. But I'll tell you, this year...
If you were at any point as excited as you were in 2010 when the Habs reached the Final Four between now and then, I'd wonder what was wrong with you. Because there's been nothing to be excited about since then.
Lars Eller's 4-goal game.
Oh, the Jets.
That's it.
That was one of the greatest nights of my life.
Was it?
It sure was, man.
Okay.
That night changed my life forever.
Last year was...
The Jets came to town. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a horrible year last year, but we're putting that behind us.
Annus horribilis.
I've decided that this year I'm taking my show on the road. So first off, I was Wednesday, I was in Toronto for that big win over the Leafs.
Beauty.
Fantastic. But the best thing of them all is now I've reaffirmed the fact that I am indeed the Habs Lucky Charm, because you have to listen to this date. All right?
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, five or six Canadians were at AJ Sports World in Toronto, and they were doing a signing.
Not one of the sponsors of the Kaufman Show. Let me just put that out there.
So what happened was now I took a picture with Max Pacioretty.
Uh-huh.
I took a picture with Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah.
Took a picture with Gionta, Brendan Prest, and Josh Georges. You know, I need to say that Pacioretty scored 2 goals. Gionta scored a goal which ended his drought. Brendan Gallagher scored his goal. Josh Georges got to us.
George, I'm so happy that you, throughout all these years, you've managed to remain humble. It's so important.
But you know what's the funniest part of them all is, Dave?
What?
Okay. While we're in line, that's when the news broke out that Eric Cole had been traded.
Okay.
Now, the five Canadians ended up coming inside the room there. So now I'm sitting there and I'm chatting with Brendan Gallagher. So I tell him, I whisper into his ear, this is the honest truth. I told him, you know that, what's his name there? Michael Ryder wants his 73. And don't settle for anything less than a Rolex if he wants it. And he started laughing like hell. Now, the next day, I'm in Toronto now, and I get a text message from my cousin.
Yeah.
And she tells me, George, you won't believe it, because I had told her the story the night before. Brendan Gallagher had just been interviewed, and she mentioned something that if Michael Ryder wants to give him a Rolex, he'll gladly take it.
Great. So you're still as humble as ever, and because of you, a 20-year-old kid's going to have a Rolex. This is good. This is good. Maybe he
and
can
if
start
the Canadians win the Stanley Cup,
yeah,
we know it's on you, George.
Thanks for the call, George. Have a great night.
Guys. You too. Bye-bye.
See you later. Let's keep these going. 514-790-1866-896-2546. This is the Kaufman Show on TSN 690, and this is the chef in Montebello. Hello, Andrew.
Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Wonderful. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Before I say anything else, just a little note from my daughter, Samantha, who was so lucky to go and see an incredible show Friday night at the Corona Theater.
I hope she had a good time.
She had a blast. She sort of tried to find you and sort of got shy. And so there was, like, too many people, Dad, and it was crazy. It was just, she just wrote this down, this little note. She said, just wanted to thank you, Dave, and the Arkells for the tickets to the show on Friday night at Corona Theater. Went with a friend who, as I, was discovering the band for the very first time. Well, it didn't take us long to realize, and this breaks me up, that the old man knew what he was talking about. Saying that it was a group that she was going to love, and she does love. And the only thing that's bothering her, she doesn't understand why she hasn't heard any of their songs on French radio.
French radio?
Yeah, because my daughter is Samantha Durkee-Maurice.
Ah.
So she is completely bilingual, and she's been raised in French her whole life, and she's mostly on French radio.
Well, you can tell Samantha Durkee-Maurice that she'll be hard-pressed to find the Arkells on English radio in this town as well.
Well, that
which needs to be fixed, because I walked out of the concert in Toronto, the Hip Arkell show 2 weeks ago, and got into Nick Dyka's car and turned on the radio, and Whistleblower was playing on the Edge in Toronto. And I asked him, does this happen a lot? And he kind of sheepishly said, yes, it does. Mm. And yeah, I think that the rock stations in this town, I don't know why they're not playing it. It would fulfill the CanCon requirements, and they're really good.
They're such a versatile group. I mean, what an incredibly intelligent individual as well. I mean, the leader, and I'm sorry, his name just, I can't remember.
His name is Max. Did you hear him on Mitch's show this week?
I loved it.
Yeah, he was great, wasn't he?
I said, wow, I'd like to go and have a beer with this guy. But, hey, how about them Habs?
How about them first-place Montreal Canadiens?
I mean, I think the world has gone completely crazy, because I heard, I think, was it Middlebury? What's his name?
Milbury. Mike Milbury.
Milbury, thank you very much. I call him Middlebury because I never know if he's on what side he's on anyways. But Milbury.
That's not bad.
Defending the Montreal Canadiens today on Boston radio.
I know.
I could not believe it. I looked at my girlfriend. I said, shoot me now. I can die. Because I just never thought he would finally realize that what's been going on in Boston for so long, every single time that something goes wrong in a Boston game. It's the refs, the Canadians diving, and stuff like that. It's just crazy. And I loved Brian Wilde this evening. I could sit and listen to this guy for hours.
Brian's the best.
Yeah, he's great. He's great to listen to. And, you know, you're right. And I don't even think that Milbury was looking at the complaining and, you know, the homers in Boston and stuff like that. I think Milbury watched the game. And if you know your hockey and you watched that game last night, you know that the Canadians came out there as the aggressor. They came out as the aggressor. They were playing dirty. Yes, they were playing dirty. Absolutely, they were playing dirty, and they were getting under the Bruins' skin, which was the game plan all along. You can tell this was the game plan because PK Subban kind of gave it away when he was waving off the guys after he got tripped up and ran into Peter Budaj. I think it was Nathan Horton that did it. And he told the guys, don't retaliate. This is what we're going to do. We're going to get under these guys' skin, and eventually they're going to lose it. And what happened? Zdeno Chara loses it. Marshall, with seconds left with a faceoff in the Canadian zone, almost draws a penalty. He gets two of his players who will practically jump on him to say, hey, man, what are you doing? We've got 30, 40 seconds left here. We've got a faceoff in the opposing zone, and you're losing your mind. It was a game plan all along, and Mike Milbury can see that the Canadians came out there, the aggressors, and they played hard-nosed hockey, and the Bruins didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, that was the press at the end with the press, and it was the exact same thing. I mean, they can constantly do this anyways. It's just sort of the pot calling the kettle black and stuff like that. But it was just great to see. I don't know what the next thing's coming up from Marc Bergevin. I know there's something coming down the road, and the Michael Rydell thing, I think Tony said it best. It wasn't actually to get rid of Cole. It was just make room for Gallagher on the first line. Get rid of some money. I find the Ryder's going to have to suck it up a little bit more, but I think... Give him time.
Yeah, it takes time. It's a whole new system for him.
And don't forget, this is not the Mike Rydell that we saw last in Montreal.
Right.
This is a very different player. And you could see the reaction from the crowd, from the fans in the first couple of days of the trade, remembering the Michael Rydell that, you know, was a bit more of a shit disturber and throwing paper airplanes and, oh, I'm sorry, Jay. I hope you're okay.
Oh,
and
shocking.
I know, it happens. It's after midnight. And that's not the Michael Rydell. He grew up. He won a Stanley Cup. He contributed greatly in Dallas.
But you know what I think is even more important?
What?
The Montreal Canadiens have grown up since that time.
Oh, big time. Big time.
It's not even, you don't even recognize this team again anymore. I mean, the leadership is coming from above. The 24/7 is just great as well. And I really love that Mr. Molson said this was the best one that had come out was the last one, because it actually showed them in a bad time and the way that the team has weathered the storm. And I love the part where they actually brought PK in, and I said, oh, my God, he's going to get his butt ripped out. But he just came in with Jean-Jacques Daigneault looking over his things. This is what you have to do. This is what you can do. And PK at the end says, wow, that's what I need.
It's a little safe, though. You know, I criticize it a little bit because...
What do you mean, Jay?
It's too safe. I mean, we know that there's more stuff going on behind the scenes, and I wish they'd be a little more truthful. Obviously, they have to be... I mean, I don't want to say propaganda. You know, that's going a little too far. But at the same time, they're not going to show you some of the ugly stuff. It's kind of like, oh, woe is me, or... Ryan White, the coach wasn't happy with him. Well, I think he was a little pissed off than they really showed. I mean, I'll give them credit. They did take Terrier's quote, and they showed it when he said, I guess I was wrong to play Ryan White tonight and so on. But at the same time, you know, if you watch the HBO stuff, you know, they get down and dirty a little bit more. Remember, this is a production from RDS and the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, but Jay, exactly. That's it. You just said it. It's from the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
Never, ever seen anything even close to this before.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely better than what we've had in the last 5 years. That's for sure. We had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. And I give them full credit for opening it up.
At least this propaganda is transparent.
Yeah. At least. No, at least there's propaganda. Well, at all. You know?
No, before there was propaganda, it was just not as well constructed. It was
like the Masons in there. I don't know what the hell was going on.
It was about carefully crafted press releases and you know, building the brand, and it was that type of tactic, Jay, that had everybody, 21,273 fans, all wearing Habs jerseys at games.
Right.
It was the building of the brand.
Right.
It was Canadiens Inc.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
Now it goes a little bit deeper.
I'm not complaining, but you know, I've only watched two episodes, so maybe I can't talk. But
I find it very compelling television.
I don't find it. I think it could be more compelling. You know, it's wealth. It's
you mean
superbly
like
well
if it told what really went on?
Yes, yes, but no, I don't expect them obviously to start getting into details and in the rooms, and they're going to show what the Canadians allow them to show.
Right.
But could you imagine, actually, if they had done this in the last regime, it would be basically watching The Simpsons.
It wouldn't have happened. And no, The Simpsons is brilliant.
But you have Mr. Burns, who would be there, who is like Gauthier. I mean, for goodness sake. Anyways, guys, we'll leave this, end this on a great note. I just want to thank you again, once again, for my daughter and the chance to go and see an incredible, incredible band. Arkells, people, if you have a chance to go and see these guys, They're the next best thing, I'm telling you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so happy that Samantha had a good time, and we'll be in touch soon. Jeff, thank you for the call.
Take care, guys.
Let's take one more before John Kakalakis brings you a sports update. Let's go to Jerry in NDG. Hello, Jerry.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right, sort of. I got to tell you this interesting
thing. Anything we can help with, Jerry?
Give me a call if you have a chance.
All right, deal.
All right. Here's an interesting story. When my wife was in the hospital about 3 weeks before she passed away, as you know, she'd passed away at home, she sent me out for lunch. So I went into the hospital elevator, and I hear these two people. This was during the Habs-Washington series. And they were talking about Ovechkin and all this kind of stuff. And I said, oh, I'm from Montreal. I think you guys, I meant to be very interesting about it. So I said, yeah, I think you guys will end the series because the Habs were losing 3-1. And she said her favorite player was Ovechkin. And I said, Ovechkin? What's he won? Nothing. I said, the best player. And she said he was the best player. I said, no, Sid the Kid is the best player. He's won a cup and a gold medal. Well, after that conversation, she went home, and she never saw Caps win again because the Habs won the series.
Right. That's a story.
Yeah.
And Ovechkin has taken a beating of late, and I would like to think that he still has the opportunity to turn his career around. It's not that it's too late. I think part of it is that this Capitals team, their window has obviously closed.
Yeah.
Which is a major issue.
Some people akin...
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Some people akin the Washington downfall right now, the slide, to going back to that series against Washington. They've never been this. It's almost a Lucic Komisarek type thing. Never the same after that.
Never the same since, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, they've had the revolving door with the coaching.
Yep.
And, and that team...
You got to feel for them because they have a great fan base.
They do,
and they've really, really worked hard to build it up.
We had this conversation with Dave Zirin a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
That if they're not careful, they're going to completely fall by the wayside. We have the Washington Nationals, who are the toast of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
RG3 and the Redskins. They're suddenly the also-rans. I mean, of course, they're still the Wizards, so at least they're okay in that regard.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, and it's a delicate situation.
The team that should go back to calling itself the Bullets.
It's a delicate situation. Washington's the kind of city, especially when it involves the Capitals, that, I mean, they'll get a full stadium or, you know, it doesn't take them long and they'll get an empty stadium and you won't have anybody showing up.
Well, fickle fans are everywhere.
Yeah.
We've seen that situation in this town as well.
Mm-hmm. But they're one of those cities that in hockey I'd like to see succeed because they've been around for long enough.
Absolutely. And again, without any real taste of success. I mean, Olaf Koltzig bringing them to
nothing.
Then they get swept by Detroit in the finals.
Yeah,
I think.
There's Koltzig and Rod Langway, and that's about it.
Pretty much.
You know?
Who was a Hab, was he not?
Yes, he was.
Very briefly.
Not that briefly. I think 2-3 seasons, late 70s, early 80s.
Feels pretty brief.
Yeah.
That would have been a fun defenseman to watch growing up.
Yes, it would
in
have.
This town. And think about how crappy Washington would have been if they'd never given, if he'd never come from the Habs.
Right.
My goodness, is that Ron in Montreal North on the line? Ron, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Yeah, hi, guys.
How are you, Ron?
Not too bad.
You enjoy watching the Habs this week?
Yeah, quite surprised.
I know.
It's like Brian said. Okay, like you do think they're too small,
right?
At times, you know, and
I was hoping you heard that.
You don't expect them to, you know, expected them to have problems. All right, but they kept it basically to the game plan, and so that worked out. That worked out pretty well. I'm glad for that.
I know that you definitely weren't expecting 2 wins out of 3 in an overtime loss.
No, because if you notice the game on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
okay, the defense, you know, was awful. I mean, you know,
it was a 7-6 game.
Both defenses were awful.
People want to blame Price, but problem is, you know, like when you don't let your goalie see any of the pucks. And there was too many defensive errors.
Yeah, but again, at the end of the day, Toronto had our number, had the Habs number this season, beat them the two first games. Montreal goes into the Air Canada Center, beats them.
Yeah.
Saturday night more than holds their own with a team that, if they aren't a Stanley Cup favorite now, then they probably will be by the time 15 more games are played. I mean,
I don't think we can run and gun with them.
Well, again, and that's and I'd imagine you'd say the same thing about Boston.
Not run and gun with them. See if we play our games, different story.
Yeah.
But even Pierre McGuire said on Friday, if you're going to try to run and gun with Pittsburgh, you know. I mean, you saw with what ease they were able to pass the puck.
Absolutely.
In the Canadian zone. And most teams haven't been able to do that.
But you're also talking about some of the greatest players on the planet.
Yeah, but most teams still haven't been able to do that against the Canadians this year.
Well, again, you know, I feel like
playing well,
it started as a small sample size, and it continues to grow. And right now there's very little that, again, we can talk about potential issues with the Montreal Canadiens, but there's very little on its face to be complaining about right now that I would feel valid complaining about.
And neither
and
will
see
Ron.
Ron agrees.
Yeah. No, not really, but, you know.
Well, Ron, you're more than welcome to give your 2 cents, man.
Because, you see, like, both of you guys are young, right?
Yes.
So you don't remember the Canadians of the 1970s.
No.
You don't remember the Canadians of the
1960s. No.
Okay, so, see, neither of those teams got pushed around.
No, but the game was so different, Ron.
Especially the Canadians of the 70s. I mean, you know, nobody pushed us around.
Which
the Canadians of the 80s either. Even as late as the 80s, the Canadians were never a team to be pushed around.
Yeah, but we didn't win anything. And, you know, we won one cup in the 80s. You know,
like, yeah.
You know,
made two trips to the final, but you know, a lot more teams.
You know, basically we were there, but we weren't there because there was too many, you know, put it this way, 1979, that was it. Too many egos got in the way. You know, when you tell Scotty Bowman, you're not good enough to be coach and general manager.
Yeah, well, I mean, they brought in Irving Grundman, and you know how well they did with that, right?
Irving Grundman.
You know,
my math teacher back at Souvenir Elementary, Mr. Grundman.
Too many people's egos getting in the way. Bowman knew that the team had to be blown up, knew that it had to change.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to hear that. A couple of other things you were talking about.
Yes.
The questions they were asking at the combines was absolutely ridiculous.
Terrifying. And I know it was you
and
that...
And it's illegal.
Yes.
That's what I don't understand.
Well, no, Ron, it's illegal. It's not illegal for me to ask you if you like girls. It's illegal for me to ask you if you're gay.
That's what they were asking.
It's semantics, but there is a difference between the two.
That's what they were asking. They were asking sexual orientation.
Well, supposedly they were doing it in a way that legally they would not get grilled for it. So it was like, do you like boobs?
Plausible deniability.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like boobs.
There you go.
You know, but
clip that.
Yeah, but when they're really big and whatever, they're grotesque.
Well, again, if that was the answer.
I could show you pictures of, you know, like you would say, what the hell is this?
Ron, thank you for the call.
Okay.
Have a great night, man.
Well, I wasn't finished, but it's okay.
Oh, checking it right now.
Okay.
Save the expos at hotmail.com.
Yeah, well,
take care,
about 8 minutes there, Ron.
We'll speak soon, okay. Ron. Thanks for the call.
Be good.
Good night. Let's keep this going. We'll take that news break a little later. Let's go to Mike in St. Leonard. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you, man?
Good.
Calling in early tonight.
Yeah, calling in early. I had to call in. When you're talking about 24/7 and the Washington Capitol. I'm like, yeah, I'm on that. Rod Langway. Remember what country he's born in?
Yes, he was born in. Hold on. Wait a minute. I know this.
We're not looking anything up. We never do.
No.
Nor does anybody ever look it up for us.
It's Asia, isn't it? It's in... God.
Quick, name an Asian country that doesn't exist anymore. Is he from Siam?
I think he's in Taiwan.
Is he from Bhutan?
Was it...
I think it's Taiwan.
Burma.
I think it's Taiwan.
Taiwan or Korea?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, his dad was stationed there.
Yeah, he's American.
He's an army brat.
Yeah, he's an army brat.
Yeah, exactly. You know what it is with the... Jay, you'll remember this because you're probably closer to my age. You remember in the 1980s, the Washington Capitals had a maybe 3 or 4 year period where they had over 100 points each year.
Uh-huh.
In the playoffs, the Islanders...
The LaFontaine goal.
Yeah, would just destroy these guys.
The overtime goal by LaFontaine.
Yeah, and they're kind of the same team now. It's like, sure, you could do okay in the regular season, but in the playoffs, don't even look for the Washington Capitals. And the thing about 24/7, as much as I would love to see more of the backroom stuff, in a way, it's a protection, because it's one of the reasons why I don't like the Washington Capitals now, is after their 24-7, the team, I don't mind, but their general manager, McPhee's a jerk, you know? I remember one part of an interview on that HBO special where they're like, he was under pressure, but they weren't doing well.
Wait, so you didn't like the Habs last year?
Well, I didn't care for the Habs last year at all. But, you know, with McPhee, they were asking him, well, what is it about the Capitals? Can you do better? He's like, and if anyone could do this job, it wouldn't be as special as it is, and that's the reason why I'm here. Something to the lines of some arrogant, aloof crap. So I'm happy to see his team tank. I'm like, if you're going to be an arrogant jerk, you better be able to back it up with some wins.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It is a question of protection. I mean, you start getting too deep into the locker room and start bugging the players too much, obviously it's going to have an effect on them on the ice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and they're not claiming that it's journalism, but they're kind of acting like it is.
No, they're not.
Well,
no, they're not.
It's documentary style.
Hold on.
It's documentary style.
Can we just be very clear that Mike, you're calling us right now through the ability of a Bell phone line.
Yes.
And that we're owned by Bell Media.
Yes.
And that the Montreal Canadiens play at the Bell Center.
Yes.
And that it's Bell, 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 Bell.
Right.
Okay. So there's no point in this. Does this come across that show is journalism? It's a show that is paid for part and parcel and put on a station that owned their. There are channels on my Bell 5 that basically
are there journalists
say,
in this station?
Yes, you're looking at one.
And
well,
who is this station owned by?
Bell Media.
Okay, so
it's different.
They're treating it documentary style, kind of like the HBO 24/7 series.
Yeah, it's warts and all of what we decide to show
listen,
you.
Listen, I'm not knocking it to the point where, but it is what it is, and it just I get frustrated
What is it? It's a television show.
It's safe
that shows you the day to day travails of the Montreal
Does
Canadiens.
It?
Again, it shows you what they want to show you
exactly.
Compared to what it was 2 years ago when you didn't see anything.
And I said I'm really happy to see that. I'm just saying that it's safe. It's a little too safe for my taste.
But again, whereas with the HBO one, because there was some swearing and the independence and the knowledge that HBO...
It was a little deeper.
The NHL is making this to sell the game on the whole, not the Habs are making this to sell the Habs.
Yeah.
Well, is that what it is?
No, I'm not thinking that they're trying to sell the Habs. I just think that it's just the way they present it in the documentary style, and it's cool, and it's glorifying, and the slow motion shots are cool, and it's actually really beautifully filmed. But it's just I don't know. It's just I like getting down dirty and trying to see the grit and dirtiness behind of what's going on. And at the same time,
thanks for the call, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Sorry to cut you off there, bud. Call back later at your usual time, Mike. We're thrown off a little bit by your untimely call here.
It's just so weird to know that we have a full set of phone lines with Mike.
Yeah, we
got
to get to our other callers. I'm not going to rant on about it. I like the documentary. It's good.
No,
okay.
No, you don't.
No,
don't
I do
lie.
Like it. I do like it. I do like it. I just like to see more.
You're allowed to take umbrage with certain things.
Yes.
Mr. Farrar.
Thank you. Well, like I don't.
Let's go to Louis in Mercier. Hello, Louis.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Not too bad. Jay, they should do a documentary on your show.
I would like to see that.
Your buddy, the caller before, he asked you where was the Rod Langway born. Where was Rick Chartra born?
Rick Chartra.
Oh.
That's a good one, too. That I know as well. It's just I'm trying to get my hockey knowledge back there.
I'm going with Germany.
No.
All right.
Venezuela.
Caracas, Venezuela.
Venezuela.
Well, he could suit up in the World Baseball Classic then.
Yeah. Lots of the callers are talking about the Washington Capitals.
Yes.
Well, you're right. This team, and you look at the whole history of the Capitals, well, I think they have one of the worst record in the history in hockey, I think, what's the 867-5? Well, you don't. You're too young. Well, first, who's the first?
I'm just young enough.
That has his jersey retired for the Washington Capitals.
It was a player who passed away, wasn't it?
I think so. And he played with Pierre Bouchard, by the way.
I can't remember, but I remember seeing the name and looking it up because it wasn't a name that was familiar to me. And his career was shortened, and he passed away young, I believe.
Yvon Labre.
Okay. There you go.
I was right about Rod Langway. It is Taiwan.
Good for
you.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
But,
thanks for looking that up.
Hold
boys.
On. Isn't that Chinese Taipei now?
What?
Isn't that Chinese Taipei?
Yeah, okay.
If we're again, World Baseball Classic semantics. It's funny to six people.
Yeah. And I was very happy that Matthew Ross, he had Cliff Floyd you know, every time they have a former Expo, you or everybody on the TSN 690, it reminds us of, you know, all the great Expos team. But they were talking about the dynasty. You look at the – it's so tough to win a cup. You look at the Pittsburgh Penguins now. Okay, they have Crosby, and I thought this team, they had a chance of winning three or four cups in a row, but it's so tough. Look, they won a cup in 2009. It's been now 4 years, but they lost Jordan Staal. They don't have the same defense. Gonchar, Rob Scuderi, Mark Eaton. Their defense, it's not the same. They have a young Simon Desprez. Christopher Letang is great, but it's so tough to win the cups. I know Toronto was comparing the 1970s. Yeah, but in those days, there were only, 18, 21 teams. Now there's 30 teams. So it's so tough either in basketball, baseball, and football. It's so tough to win championships. And you look at the half this year. Well, it's a big surprise this year. Marc Bergevin, Michel Therrien, they want to change the culture. What they want is in the 1970s and 80s, when you wear the Montreal Canadiens jersey, guys, you know as well as anybody, you got to be proud.
Yeah.
That's tough for athletes now. And we're talking about Ovechkin. You know what? Ovechkin, he was supposed to be a great player, but it seems with the big contracts, well, he doesn't care anymore. So you look at the Capitals. Maybe next summer, the owner, Mr. Ted Leonsis, well, he's going to have to do something because if the Capitals, it seems that they're going to be the bust again. He's going to have to trade the guy and maybe get some young players. So
they have to. Well, I don't know about Ovechkin, but they absolutely have to start over.
Oh, yeah, they have to do something because, you look, when they got rid of Simon, one of the big problems, Simon last year, he came to the ring and he said, I just don't care. He just took his Corvette and bye. There were nothing in this dressing room. So this year they have Adam Oates. The general manager, I think, McPhee, maybe he's going to be gone this summer.
Well, if Mike and St. Leonard has his way, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't think maybe the...
Thank you for the call, Louis.
No, maybe think the Capitals miss Semin a little bit this year?
You would think.
It would think, you know. I mean, you look back on it, and, you know, they're always hard on players who are... Oh, guys who take time off. I mean, there are a lot of players in Montreal who have been infamous for that. Andre Kasitsin, Alex Kovalev, these guys have been always accused of taking time off and being inconsistent. And Semin is a guy who also has that bad rap. But you know what? I'd take him.
Well,
if you look at his, I hate the plus minus.
You take him next year. You take him now and potentially mess with the chemistry.
I'm not really talking in regards to the Canadians.
Okay.
I'm saying in general, that's the kind of guy I'd like to have on my team.
Okay.
You know, and who I think the Washington Capitals can really use right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's the kind of thing where if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, then sometimes sometimes, Jay, you'll make a move. And it'll just completely blow everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And it does the opposite of what you're hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't seem that Semin was the problem because they're worse off than they were last year.
That's it. Let's go to Mike in Montreal. Hello, Mike.
Actually, it's Matt, but that's okay.
Hello, Matt.
It's Matt Vermeer, actually, buddy.
Matt Vermeer. How are you, sir? Matt Vermeer on Twitter, somebody I've just started following of late. And how are you, man?
I'm very good, man. It's very good to talk to you for the first time. I just want to say, man. Great show.
Thank
easily,
you.
I would say the best on Montreal sports radio.
Do you work for Bell Media?
No, I don't.
Damn it!
You keep it up, sir. You will be the mayor. I'll find a way to put you in office, my friend.
Very kind of you to say, Mike. We appreciate. We've got some of the best listeners in radio, and we really appreciate it. It's great to know that people want to turn their brains on this late at night.
Well, it's good. You know, Jay, even you, man. I gotta say.
Even you, Jay.
Well, in the line, buddy. You're good. Everything's great on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
I just want to
talk some ball with you guys.
Sure. I'll tell you, we have baseball on in the studio right now.
Live baseball.
The Dutch are up 4-0 on Australia. Jonathan Schoop just hit a 3-run home run. They look like there's maybe 12 people in the crowd in Chinese Taipei right now.
I just won my baseball pool. You just made my day, man. That's it. I was picking the Dutch over the Australians, and that guy you said... Was it Ariaga or Bariaga?
Ariaga.
I think it was Aruglia. Either way, I don't know. I was in as soon as they said they were all signing autographs.
I tell you that I honestly made a halfback passes to center, holds it joke last night. So I appreciate that. Yes.
And Crestfield wax paper, man. It's king of your kitchen, buddy. I just got to say. No, but I'm just saying, what I was catching the game actually yesterday in a completely illegal way on the internet.
Yeah.
And I was watching Brazil. They were playing Cuba. And it was just a struggle, man. Yeah, and they were playing, I guess, wherever in where are they playing now overseas?
I think they're in Japan.
Yeah,
and then the other pool is in what they call Chinese Taipei, which I think is Taiwan, but they call it that to not offend the Chinese.
Yeah,
is that how that works?
Yeah, because baseball has never been about offending anybody, you know.
No, of course not.
But and I'm just watching this game, and it's you know. Brazil and Cuba, and I'm listening to Buck Martinez calling the game, and it's just like he's struggling. He doesn't know who anybody's playing. Brazil got some guy, Masumoto, playing first base, I think it was, and it just made it seem like, you know, it's really a shame that a tournament like this is having such a problem. I mean, Brazil, I can understand. There's no big names that you can really round up for a tournament like this.
Well, no, their biggest name is their manager, Barry Larkin.
Your body, man, body. And it's
somebody I saw tweet out that if he doesn't have a dog named Larry Barkin, he's really missing the mark.
By the way, since he's in Brazil, he's calling himself Larkin. That's all it is now. He's lost Barry, and he just is Larkin.
With
now.
Like an accent,
one name.
An accent on every vowel in his name.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, I'm just wondering because they got, you know, Masumoto's playing first base. They got, like, I don't know, Fukudome playing second. It's like they showed up to Japan and they were screwed for players and they started handing out Brazilian passports.
There's a huge connection between the two countries. And I think we discussed it last week. I was trying to figure out if there was some name and it wasn't coming to me. But there's you'll see it in mixed martial arts as well. There are a lot of
Brazilian jiu-jitsu is huge.
Yeah. There's also a large Japanese population, I think, in either Peru or Chile.
Right, and that's the influence that brought jiu-jitsu into Brazil. And Brazilian jiu-jitsu is very different from Japanese jiu-jitsu. It's been around for 100 years in Brazil, and it's actually evolved into something completely different. But again, yeah.
So I don't know what's brought about
to the culture.
I'm not sure what brought about an influx of Japanese to Brazil, but obviously they brought their passion for baseball with them.
I would love to see Masumoto take a high knee to the guy running down first base. That'd be fantastic.
Well, that would be now we're mixing and meshing sports.
Oh yeah, well, hey, that's
mixed martial baseball.
I'd like to see Dana White and Bud Selig in an octagon, but
well,
I mean, it's not my birthday.
That's going to be the new biathlon, I promise you. But it was just you know, like, and that made me think about Canada's team and, you know, all these players backing out, and I'm a little bit upset about Russell Martin not, you know.
Yeah, and Jesse Crane just started
his injury, right?
Yeah.
So you can't really hold that against him.
Oh, no, of course not.
Votto is going.
Which is good. I just found that out, and that really renewed my faith in this whole tournament. But, I mean, without the Expos, and I know that's a terrible wound to reopen, but, I mean, like,
you're not reopening it. It's open.
It's open.
That wound doesn't close, my friend.
Yeah, it's steaming. It's disgusting. But it's, you know, I was really counting on watching Canada play baseball and really having that pride again, as I did when watching, you know, the Expos. Because the Expos really left. I was 17 or 18 when they had just left town. And I had just got my car and I was able to buy tickets and go to games regularly. My claim to fame, man, I got to tell you, was sitting in right field and having, what was his name, Sammy Sosa flip me off. That was like highlight of my career, man. Oh, that was, I think there was like cork bat jokes and some type of alcoholism involved. I don't know, but either way.
You kept it classy.
Sound and speech traveled well in that stadium.
Yeah, nothing was thrown. But yeah, well, that was the thing. And yeah, in a dome stadium with about 60 people, 40 of them employees, it's, you know, your voice can travel pretty far, but
well, at least you got to be there for a part of it and experience it.
It was great. I was there for the last game too. Anyways, boys, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but hey, it's a pleasure listening to you guys. You do a great job.
Matt, thank you so much for the support. Thanks for the tweets, and please don't be a stranger.
You guys got to be more than once a week. I don't know who I got to talk to, but listen, if you ever see my name on a ballot, buddy, you vote for me, unless the question is like, should he be executed or something.
As long as we don't see you at the Charbonneau Commission in the next few months, then you'll have my vote for mayor, I promise.
Just don't look at my socks. We'll be okay, man.
Deal.
That's where the money's at. That's where all the money's at.
It's in the safe that won't close as well.
All right.
Thanks, Matt. Night, appreciate it. Have a great night.
Ciao, man.
Let's keep this going. Phone lines, couple of lines open. 514-790-1866-896-2546. Very call heavy hour two of the Kaufman Show, eh, Mr. Farrar?
Yep. We'll take it.
Let's
we want to talk to the people.
Damn straight. Let's go to Travis in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, Travis.
Hey, Jay and Dave. And I was thinking for the Charter Commission, if you could find the French dumb of the episode where Mayor Quimby says, "Did I hear a briefcase opening?" That'd be a pretty good one.
That would be pretty good.
And before I talk about hockey, I need to just temporarily, as a Jays fan, defend Buck Martinez. When he slurs names and gets it entirely wrong, when you're scoring at home, you put that into it. So that's part of it for Buck Martinez.
That's kind of fun.
Buck Martinez's job is just to sound good. You know, I mean, he comes on and he's like, you know, "Here's Juan Batista." You know, it's just, he's got a nice... He's got a nice flow to the way he talks, nice and slow.
If I'm an American baseball fan, I'm much happier having Buck Martinez as the play-by-play man for the World Baseball Classic than his role last time around, which was coaching Team USA.
Yeah. Wow.
Boy, I got to say, Travis, I really wish that this tournament was in Toronto, round one again. It would make me a very happy man. And Toronto would be guaranteed selling out more than they did last time, because the first game of the tournament for the U.S. is against Mexico, and R.A. Dickey's going to be starting. And imagine if Toronto had gotten the opportunity to see R.A. Dickey pitch a month before he starts on opening day in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a beautiful thing. And as it is, it's nice to see it actually growing. I mean, yeah, it's not exactly the first. The group stages aren't going to be packed to the gills, but, you know, it's being shown. It's on the air.
It's on the air right now. And, there's nobody at the game right now, but frankly... It's the games in Chinese Taipei and the
and
two teams.
And it's Australia
and the Netherlands. Exactly. And
what do you got? Andrew Jones. And that's about it.
When I went to see the round one in 2009 in Toronto, there were maybe 12 people in the Sky Dome for Italy versus Venezuela. There was no draw for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understandable. So right now we have, like you said, Jay, teams with, other than Andrew Jones, guys we've never, ever heard of. Jonathan Shoup, once again, is the name of the player. Hit the
Shoup dead.
Yes.
Shoup dead.
Thank you.
Shoup dead. Oop dead.
I want to shoot, baby.
If it results in one youth league in continental Europe, if it results in one group of kids in the Netherlands playing baseball, it's worth it.
Yes. Yes, especially because you know that they call it honk ball there?
I did not know that.
Yes.
They call it what?
Honk ball.
Honk ball?
Honk ball. H-O-N-K-B-A-L. They play honk ball in the Netherlands. I'm in love. Is there anything that country does wrong?
The Netherlands?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something.
All right. Well, I'm going to drink a Heineken during this commercial break, and I'll think about it.
But really quickly, do you know how much the NHL has made so far this year and is projected to make in this lockout shortened year?
I heard that they're expected to make 70% of what they would make in a regular year. Which is very impressive because they're playing less than that.
If I remember
games,
the numbers correctly, I think they made $3.3 billion
last year.
And right now they're already at $2.4.
No way.
Yeah, I think that's the stat. Can one of you guys look that up, please? I saw a stat. I'm not sure if that's exactly a stat. I'm probably wrong.
Wow.
Because when it involves numbers and math of any kind, I'm completely inept.
14% of all people know that.
Yes.
But you know what this is going to mean? It's going to mean that when the new Canadian television contracts go up,
yeah,
and the league revenues go up, the cap isn't going anywhere. It's going to go north. It's going to keep rising. And any justification for the cap, I mean, you know me, I'm a pretty liberal guy when it comes to politics and labor relations. I think that you're going to see more offer sheets, as you should. You're going to see less collusion. And it's not going to be a magical, you know, a happy, fair, parity environment for the smaller teams. It's going to be closer to what it was in the 90s.
Big shock there, eh, Travis? So you're saying we're 7 years away from a major labor dispute?
I don't think so. I mean, at a certain point, did the Kansas City Royals care that they suck when they make money?
Well, we know the Marlins don't.
Yeah, the Marlins don't care.
But their fans care.
Yeah, but nobody cares about them, particularly not Jeff Loria.
Yes, gentlemen?
I just saw it, and they're projecting $2.4 billion for this year,
okay,
which is still incredible because in 2011, 2012, they hit a record $3.3 billion.
Which I think, like I said, is roughly 70% of what they made last year.
Yeah, so I got the numbers right. I didn't get the context of the numbers right, but, I mean, that's okay. Incredible.
Yeah.
And once they get that, once they have a sane and logical revenue-sharing system that Jeff Snyder and Jerry Jacobs don't cry about too much, you're going to see teams like Florida, Phoenix, if it still exists, Dallas, and they're going to be perfectly happy playing to the cap, paying the cap floor, having 15 people in the seats, and keeping the tax breaks and the tax write-offs to keep the arenas open.
Travis, and the fans came flying back.
They did.
I think so. At least in Canada, they did. I mean, we saw a study that said that there are 120,000 pairs of season's tickets in the country, divided by the seven teams, and that less than 100 people canceled.
Mm-hmm. NBC ratings are through the roof this year.
I know one person who has successfully sort of kind of boycotted this year. One person.
I said I was going to do it, and I went to a game. But I've got free tickets.
I have been to one game.
Yeah.
I'm speaking of myself.
Yeah.
But my season tickets are still there. It's just that my partner is happy to take them right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's going to kill that ticket price is even worse? What happens if Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa make the playoffs in the same year?
Wait, how is that a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing to anybody unless you like paying more for the tickets. They're going to... Once the league revenues keep going up, that's gonna reinforce it even more.
Okay, Habs tickets are going up next year no matter what. The tickets there was not even a freeze when they were in a last place team.
If there was a zombie apocalypse, the Habs tickets will go up next year.
Jay, we discussed this last week on the show. The government of Canada will not be a safe haven for zombies. Stephen Harper has promised me, and I trust that man. He writes hockey books.
Yes.
Oh, you know, on the subject of The Walking Dead, I would definitely trust Stephen Harper.
Any man with Jimmy Johnson's hair can be trusted.
I wouldn't go that far.
Travis, thanks for the call, man.
Cheers.
So, Jay, in our time that remains on this week's Kaufman Show.
Yes.
I think we should talk about Rich Griffin's mailbag in the Toronto Star.
You want to talk about Rich Griffin's mailbag?
In the Toronto Star.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Rich Griffin was the PR man for the Montreal Expos.
Yes.
When I was growing up.
Yes.
And he left for greener pastures and is now the Toronto Star's baseball columnist.
Mm-hmm.
And every week he does, or every couple of weeks, he does a mailbag. People write in and he responds. So I'm going to read you in full. This man's name is Mark Vendramini, and he asks, this is not a Blue Jay question. You will get lots of questions about the starting rotation, who's on second, who's the closer, and I'm also interested on your thoughts on it, but I'm interested in your thoughts on another topic. With Tim Raines' induction to St. Mary's, the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, I'd like to know your thoughts on baseball's future in Montreal. Will it ever happen again, even AA or AAA? I know that a group led by Warren Cromartie has been looking at the possibility. Will we have a Pearson Cup again? And then Rich responds to Mark. With all the talk about baseball returning to Montreal, there has never been a potential owner step up and declare himself with the real money to pursue a AA or AAA franchise. Plus, unlike Ottawa, the city government has never stepped up to back the project. Montreal, if it was to be a minor league team, would need a stadium with a good location. They could not play at the Olympic Stadium. Ottawa is ahead of Montreal in that regard, too. The Cromartie Group was looking for a major league franchise, which at this point is not going to happen. I would love to see baseball return to Montreal and Ottawa and Calgary and Edmonton. And I think that this allows us to face a sad reality. It's one thing to sit and rest on your history. And we're very good at resting on our laurels in this town, whether it's the 24 Stanley Cups. And, you know, we've talked about this, Jay, that a lot of people don't realize there's an entire generation of Habs fans now that haven't seen a Stanley Cup. It's been 20 years. And Jackie Robinson broke into baseball in this city. Doesn't have much to do with this city, other than the fact that Branch Rickey decided that this would be the city.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, Montreal wasn't the city upon a hill, and they decided that the black man was going to fix baseball by coming to Montreal in 1946. It happened to Montreal. Montreal did not happen to it.
Well, there was
the equivalent of we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Yeah, but Branch Rickey did make a decision based on the fact that he thought that Montreal would have a lot less.
Yeah, than Mobile, Alabama, for sure.
Yeah, but even up going up to Philadelphia, New Jersey, even up to New York City, he thought that Montreal seems to have a less of a. Well, I guess because they had a less of a black population at the time.
That's right.
There didn't seem to be so much animosity in Montreal. He said, you know, probably be better off going up there. And he was right.
Jay, what has this city done in the last 8 years to show that they want baseball back, other than pack a ballroom last year to pay tribute to Gary Carter?
Well, I mean, there was the trip to Toronto.
How does that show? First of all, there are, I can guarantee that half that crowd in Toronto last year was from Toronto.
Okay, I'm not saying that it showed it, but I'm saying have people done?
I don't see how half a section at a Blue Jays game, it shows the world that Montreal's ready for baseball.
It doesn't. I never said it did.
Okay, so
you said what have people done? And that's something they did.
Okay. What steps?
I'm not saying it did anything.
Well, but, I'll tell you what it did. It allowed me to feel like I was in an Expos game, and it was a wonderful day, and it was really fun, and it was great to be surrounded by all those people, and Matthew did a great job of organizing it, and I hope he does it again next year. But that's not going to bring baseball back. That's resting on the laurels of our history.
Mm-hmm.
I will ask it again, and we will go a little later on the show tonight if you're okay with that, Jimmy. If anybody has an answer for me, what has Montreal done to try and get baseball to come back?
But why would they do anything? It's actually still, I mean, in terms of a team leaving a city,
mm-hmm.
you're in, you know, practically the first week of the life after death. You know, this is going to take years and years and years to get something together. So, I mean, in 8, 9 years,
yep.
What would you expect? I mean, people are going to be sad and they're going to feel sorry. They forgot for a while.
Sure did.
We're at the point now where there's a generation of people saying, oh, well, yeah, that's right, the Expos.
I'm wishing that somebody would stand up and say, we can do this. And I don't see it. And it's very disappointing. I don't see it.
But what do you mean? Like, what?
Well, okay, let's look at, we can look at two different examples,
Jay? A multi-billionaire stands up and says, we can do this.
We can look at two different examples. We can look at Ottawa, which is a small-scale model, where they're trying to bring back AA baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And we can look at Seattle, which is a city of relative size and structure and financial ability. They don't have a guarantee that the Sacramento Kings are going to move from Sacramento to Seattle, but they are working at it. They are putting the ground in place to get a stadium built. People that are committed to owning the franchise should they make it work. None of that has happened here. Nobody wants it. And maybe that's the sad reality that we need to face. But when I see a headline that says Ottawa tops Montreal as a baseball town, it freaking pisses me off, man. It hurts.
But it's true right now.
It's like a stab in the gut. That this town that was our AAA franchise, their baseball team left after the 2006 season. Montreal's after the 2004 season. When did the Sonics leave Seattle, John? I want to say 6 years ago.
I think it was 2008.
That'd be 5 years ago.
2007, 2008.
All these cities are much closer than Montreal to getting their team back. Don't tell me that people are actually making progress right now. I want to see it. I want to see it. Yes, John?
After the 2007-2008 season, they relocated to Oklahoma City.
There you go. Thank you. All these cities lose their teams, and they're up in arms about it. And here, what, just waiting for hockey season to start? Is it that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and you're right. It is a sad reality, but it is what it is right now.
Great. So Ottawa's a better baseball town than Montreal.
Right now, yes.
I hope you're all real happy.
Getting mad at the
you
people.
You should all be proud of yourselves.
Such disdain. Kaufman's just mad at everybody right now.
Shame on you all. No, man, it hurts, okay? And you know, it's funny. This article was sent to me by David Gourlay, who is the man responsible for trying to get baseball back to Ottawa. And they've got some good news in the last couple of weeks. Mandalay, which is a company that owns sports teams, and they're movie producers as well. It's a big company. And they own one of the Blue Jays minor league teams already, and they've expressed an interest in trying to get baseball to Ottawa and to make it work. And I get that they have a stadium, and I'm what a leg up on us.
Yeah, but
that
you're
is.
Talking about AAA baseball here, right?
I'm talking about something.
Yeah, and Montreal is not going to accept anything below Major League.
Okay, it's so we're back on that now. We're back on that.
But it's true.
No,
it's
but
not
how
going
does one,
to happen.
How does one prove that they deserve a Major League Baseball team after pissing it away? Because that's how the rest of the world... I know we have a story. We know what happened here. Mm. But the rest of North America, it doesn't matter how much Jonah Carey's book resonates. The popular opinion is that the Expos fans pissed away their chance to have Major League Baseball in Montreal.
Right.
Ooh, never going to sleep tonight, Jay.
But I'm telling
for
you,
all of you asking, Netherlands 4, Australia nothing.
Yeah. Anybody who's not glued to the television right now. There's
No, I think
really
it's
really captivating things going on.
No, because we have all these groups. We have we have the MVP. I look forward to, I'm assuming, what will be an opening day press conference to announce what they have planned this year. I'd like to know what they've done in the last year. They raised a lot of money that night. I'd like to know what they did with it. Obviously, some went to charity, and some was supposed to go towards... The mission statement says that they intend to bring baseball back in some capacity, which opens the door to it not being Major League Baseball, Jay. I have no issue with going to see a Double-A team play in St. Lambert 20 minutes from here, or going to see a Can-Am team play in Laval 20 minutes from here. That makes sense in my mind, and it leaves the door open for Major League Baseball to one day return to the island of Montreal. But we have to prove, we have to start over. Is Montreal ready to do that? Do they care? I'm starting to think no. And every once in a while, Jay, there are these moments where I think, you know, Gary Carter died, and we took calls for a week from people crying who suddenly remembered that they missed their baseball team. Their hero died, and it suddenly all resonated and came back in a way that it couldn't when Jamie Carroll and Brad Wilkerson were on the field for the Expos, because they didn't have that same pull like Gary Carter and Ellis Valentine. But it was that generation that gave up on the Expos. It was the guys that were our parents' age. Now, we were there till the bitter end.
Not me. I wasn't.
Well,
I had enough as well.
Really?
Yeah, I had enough. Just putting out crap on the field, you know? It's a crappy place to go. It's a crappy team we're watching. Major League Baseball is doing everything they can to hinder any kind of progress. Why would I pay good money to watch crap? I'm not going to do it. Why am I going to travel all the way down there to watch crap? Loyalty? What am I being loyal to?
I was a student at the University of Western Ontario, 714 kilometers away.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth away. And would come home.
I'm Babe Ruth away. I like that.
And go to as many games as I could. And then finally, when I realized that the ship was not only sinking, but three-quarters sunk, I transferred and did my last year of university as a visiting student at Concordia so I could get to those games at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm nuts, okay? I understand that I am the outlier in this situation. And my heart's still broken. Matt Vermeer talking about reopening the wound. There's no reopening of the wound. The wound doesn't close. And I know I'm not alone like that. I know your brother feels the same way, Jay.
Sure he does. Sure he does. But there's a reality to this. And
there is. And the reality right now is that with the lack of progress in the last 8 years, Ottawa is now a better baseball town than Montreal. And I say this fully knowing that Ottawa doesn't have a team either. But they're a better baseball team than Montreal, a better baseball city than Montreal. They are more organized. Their grassroots system seems to be more effective. They don't have a bunch of people walking around saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to save this. It's one group. And that, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not involved with any of the groups that are trying to bring baseball back. I'm not. I'm a fan. I'm writing about it because I think it's important, and I talk about it on my show because I think it's important to keep the history alive. But I don't know what's going on to bring baseball back. I just know that I see a blog like this, and it just freaks me out, man. I know, I'm so censored. I feel like this should be an uncensored podcast segment.
Yeah, so angry today. I was angry last week. I guess it was your turn.
You know what? I wasn't angry all show. I see this, and I see that nobody's calling in. And we had a ton of callers tonight.
Yeah, because we were talking about hockey.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
No, you don't think I know? I mean, come on. We got Brian Wilde on the show because...
Because he's Brian Wilde, damn it.
Because we want to talk hockey with authority, and we understand that more people will listen if we talk Habs. I totally get that. Yes, John?
Yeah, I think that every city is different. How many years did it take Washington to get another franchise?
33.
I look at the Nordiques. They lost them in 94. Not that they have a franchise coming, but they're moving forward. They're building an arena. And they have a very energetic mayor that stepped up, and I think he showed interest. He got the right businessmen involved.
Yeah.
Seattle is different. They have a different philosophy. Yes, there's money over there. But 8 years, we can't expect, because Seattle is doing what they're doing. We have to act quickly. And I agree with Jay that me personally, a double-A team would not interest me. Well, I want the bigs, but at the end of the day, I think it's big pockets. And I'm very curious to see what Warren Cromartie and his group have done this past year. He said there was a lot of positive, a lot of steps forward that were made, but I'm curious to see. But it might take 15, it might take 12, like it might take 20.
Sure, sure. And I'm allowed to be impatient. I'm allowed to be. As someone who's ready to plunk down his money to go and see this and to make this happen and willing to bust my ass to make this happen. I mean, this is my pipe dream, right? This is the thing that I dream about. This is one of the reasons that I want to stay in Montreal. I want to see this happen.
I get you. True, you know me. I love baseball, too.
I know. This isn't supposed to be me against you or me against anyone.
No, I understand.
I think there are a lot of people that are like-minded to me right now that would like to see this happen, that see baseball on television, that see spring training, that see the Blue Jays doing what they're doing and think, man, this could have been us. With a couple of different things going a different way, this could have so easily been Montreal and not Toronto. And that's hard. And, yeah, I look forward to seeing what Cromartie's up to. And I understand that Rome was not built in a day. And he also owes me nothing. He doesn't have to give a press conference every 3 months to say we've accomplished this or we haven't accomplished this. And it could take 20 years. I understand that. But when Rich Griffin says that what he's doing isn't going to make it happen, I like Rich Griffin. And I see that and it freaks me out because I know that Rich Griffin's got his ear to the ground. He knows what's going on. We've had him on this show before.
Mm-hmm. He understands.
And I just want to know what's up. I want to know what's going on, and I want to know how to do it next. What's the next step? We brought in David Gourlay, and we said, take us step by step and tell us what you've done.
Money, Dave,
happen.
Corporation, money. That's it. That's all there's going to be. Listen, it's a little bit of a case of apples and oranges for me, comparing Ottawa. Ottawa is notorious for having kind of a small town ideal to it, kind of a small town feel to it.
Sure.
So AAA always worked there, mm-hmm. or it didn't always work, but it did
it
work
had its
for
moments.
A while.
Sure, in 1995, it was the number one drawing team in the international.
Double A and AAA are going to work here. Trust me, from a
are
guy,
not.
We're working there in Ottawa because of their small town mentality. They don't have the kind of big city downtown cosmopolitan. Mentality that Montreal has. Take it from a guy who knows people on the street. They will not accept anything. I mean, you could bring a team to Laval. Nobody's going to be reading the paper and wonder, oh, what were the Laval, whatever they're called, do today? Nobody cares. Oh, nobody cares.
It's going to happen when in 3 or 4 years when the mini Bell Center is built in Laval and the Hamilton Bulldogs move there. You don't think people are going to care?
It's related to the Habs.
It's related to the Habs.
It's different.
It's a different story.
Okay.
I mean, you got it. You got to go all the way or go nowhere at all with a baseball franchise. It's the way it is. It's the reality of it. People don't care about small-time baseball.
But if Montreal didn't have a AAA franchise from 1920 to 1960, it never would have been able to prove to Major League Baseball that it could be a Major League town.
But they had never had one before.
Yeah. But, again,
that was new.
The taste in people's mouths outside of here, the perception of the situation is that we let it get away. Not that we thumbed our noses at MLB because they didn't care about us.
And that's why I say it's going to take a multi-billionaire to come up and say, listen, we got this in the works and we got that in the works and I'm interested in bringing a team
back.
And
it seems it's going to take a lot of people dying before it happens. because all these people with these memories.
Anything,
right?
Like anything in life, it takes a lot of people to die for it to happen. It's the only way that, you know, you want the first gay player to come out.
We're clipping that one with I Like Boobs, okay?
Yeah, yeah. You want the first gay player to come out in professional sports? A lot of people are going to have to die first in order for that to happen. It's a sad reality. It's just a matter of time. You just got to sit there and wait till a couple of old white rednecks croak, and then things will happen.
That's right.
You know.
That's right. Progress is slow.
That is my philosophy on life.
Progress.
Just wait for old white rednecks to die, and things will happen. Progress will ensue.
It's also, if you're wondering, ladies and gentlemen, that's Jay Farrar's next country album. Waiting for Whitey to Die.
Yeah, that's the other Jay Farrar, I think.
Let's go to Andrew in Montebello, who's back for more.
What happened?
Hello, Chef.
What happened? You guys started talking about the expos.
Oh, that's what happened.
But, Dave, unfortunately, I've really wanted to. This pipe dream of yours has been mine for a long time as well. But the Habs are going to have to suck for another 10 years. And it's not happening right now.
It doesn't look like that's going to happen.
The Canadians, the Expos can't come back because the Habs aren't playing well. That can't work. That's not how it is. If anything, the Expos come back by calling them the baseball Canadians and having them owned by the Habs.
Well, there you go.
There was a franchise called the Canadiens.
I know.
Le Canadien back in the early part of the century.
That's right.
And that's
the last early season.
I did not go down, but I mean, if you're going to go down that road, well, then you've got to get Mr. Molson and a couple of other Molsons and maybe a Mr. Coors and stuff like that, because if not, it will never, ever happen again. And it kills me, seriously, to even think that, because the way you were talking earlier, Dave, and I'm just saying, it's not going to happen in my lifetime.
I know, man, but it's frustrating because I see, you know what, the last few years, there's been a bit of a tease. And it gives us this hope. And then I see something like this mailbag from the Toronto Star today, and it just, I mean, I tweeted it out. I said, Ottawa tops Montreal as baseball town. Ouch. And frankly, that was the understatement of my day. It felt like I had been punched in the gut.
But unfortunately, what was that tease that really, really basically brought me to you? Was Gary Carter dying?
Yes.
And I'm sorry, but I mean, it was like one of the last Mohicans. There's not any of these guys left. It's going to take it's going to take a multi-billionaire who's going to be able to come in, who's just going to have an incredible love for the game, who happens to be from the Montreal region.
But you know what? It doesn't necessarily have to be from the Montreal region. I mean, we all know where George Gillette came from Colorado.
You're right.
It doesn't matter.
Mark Cuban could come into Montreal.
It doesn't matter where he comes from. It takes one. You know, I don't want to sound so pessimistic that I'm going to say it's going to take a local guy to stand up or some kind of consortium. This guy could come from Europe. You don't know where the guy's going to come from, but it's going to take that guy.
That's true.
But unfortunately, because of the laws that are in Quebec, there's nothing that even pushes somebody from exterior to even have a thought like that. Let me go to Montreal and build something incredible. No, let me go to Montreal and butt my head against a freaking system that is never going to let me get the thing that I want out of the dream that will be great for everybody.
Thank you for not swearing there, Chef.
I mean, it's incredible. It's a dream that we all want. We unfortunately have to come to the reality that there's a hell of a lot of things.
No, but before we say the dream is dead, can't somebody do something to try and make it a reality?
The God Almighty buck.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's going to ever, ever bring it back. And our passion.
Yeah, but until every billionaire is asked, then why is hope dead? Okay, that's the thing I don't understand, is why is hope dead?
Hope is not dead. What you got to do is you've got to find a kind of eccentric billionaire, kind of like Mark Cuban, a guy who's a fanboy, who always wanted to have a major league franchise of his own. You know, you want to go out there. There's one out there. There's a guy looking and say, man, I wish I owned a baseball team.
Sure.
As a hobby.
That guy used to be Jeffrey Loria.
Yeah.
So be careful what you wish for.
As a hobby. No, Jeffrey Loria is a businessman. He's not a fanboy. This is an art collector. This is an art dealer. This guy is all about business. He may claim to be a fan of baseball and to like baseball. It's very clear that he doesn't. This is clear.
Hey, you know, it's not as clear as you think, though.
Well, I mean, it looks like it to me, because he sure don't want to win. That's for sure.
Well, he's won.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's won in his bank account.
No, he's got the ring to prove it.
Yeah.
That wasn't me giving you the finger. That was me. He's got the ring to
same
prove
to you,
it.
Same to you, Kaufman. Anyway, I mean, it's you got to search. There's a guy out there who's got billions to waste, who wants to tell all his buddies, "Hey, man, I own a Major League Baseball team." So you're going to need a guy who's a little bit edgy, a guy like Mark Cuban, a guy who's who's a fan, who wants to come here and doesn't care that it's Montreal, doesn't care about the taxes he has to pay.
Absolutely,
you know, and that's how it's going to work. Unfortunately,
Andrew, thanks for the call, man.
Dave, the more I think about it right now,
yep.
The Habs they basically have to go onto a dynasty and win three in a row, and I think Mr. Molson could probably get this all done.
We'll get a baseball team back?
Hey.
Well, maybe if the beers were $25 a pop instead of 11. But I don't know about that.
Hey, guys, have a great evening.
You too, man.
Thanks a lot.
You too. Let's keep this going. Let's go to Tom in St. Lazare.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Not a problem. Hey, listen, usually I'm a hockey fan. I'm a football fan. Usually I'd be calling to talk about those. But you know what? I was actually listening to your show coincidentally the night that Gary Carter did die, and I'm 23 years old, so I don't really have a lot of. I went to one Expos game before they left, and you know, it was when I was young. I don't really remember it all that much. I think we were playing the Giants.
Okay.
Anyway, so my question to you is, you know, where would you start? In my opinion, you got to start by promoting baseball, not as MLB, but as something to do in Montreal. You know, I'm not really a soccer fan, but when they brought the Impact and they started promoting the Impact the way that they have done, you know, they put a pretty decent inaugural team together. You know, I'm willing to go down. I live in St. Lazare, so I'm willing to go all the way down there and go to this field and watch the team and watch them play, knowing that you know what, they might have a chance. So I would absolutely do that for a Major League Baseball team, you know. And if you consider that, you know, a lot of the games are in the summer, well, this is an international town. People are looking for stuff to do in the summer.
Sure.
You know, it's not only going to be Montreal fans coming in at that time. You know, you've got the F1 race, the Jazz Fest, you know, Just for Laughs. I mean, why not go to a baseball game if the price is right? And if you obviously, you know, you got to have the location, you know, somewhere in the radius of downtown. But you know, they're building this great big flipping condo thing on the top of the Bell Center. It looks like they can do anything, you know.
Well, but I think we're a long way from even discussing the fact that Montreal could be a destination and that the baseball game is something that you could do while you're in for the Jazz Fest or Just for Laughs or Franco Folie or the Fireworks Festival or whatever the hell else there is going on in the summertime in Montreal. I think that, you know, you mentioned the soccer fields. And it's an interesting point because one of the things that I used to go on, that I went on about last year after Gary Carter passed away, was that I thought that the city of Montreal, which is naming a street after Carter, which is awesome and it's better than nothing, but I wanted to see them build 8 baseball diamonds in low-income areas. Yeah. Problem with that is that it would be a multi-million-dollar operation. And, anyways, the Charbonneau Commission proves that it would end up costing 30% more than that. It just, the baseball fields that I saw growing up are now soccer. They're now soccer pitches.
But there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
No, it's
and more people play it.
It's a change in demographic. It's a change. Immigration. People coming in from Africa, from the West Indies.
Sure.
They're not coming in, and even from Europe. I mean, it started with Europe.
Fine.
Greeks,
you know,
Italians,
Jay, I'm with you on that, but that doesn't explain how the baseball diamonds in Westmount are gone, okay? That doesn't explain it.
Where the white people are at?
Yes.
Where the white people and the Jews are at.
Hang on. One second. I don't know if you guys have ever been to St. Lazare, but it's a pretty...
homogeneous?
That's a very diplomatic way of saying it.
Thank you.
But right in the center of our town, we've got three baseball diamonds.
You do?
Yeah, absolutely. And
cool.
You know what?
A lot of white people in St. Lazare.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess you could say that, but we're starting to be, you know, I guess we're starting to become more multicultural. Anyway, we have 3 baseball diamonds out here. I have a couple of friends.
Don't worry, Bill, know, 14 will change that.
Yeah.
No, I know, but at least I see interest. Like I myself am not a baseball fan. Listening to the radio, I'm interested. I would go to a game. I'm going to go to Montreal Impact games. Obviously, you know, I'm a football and a hockey guy first, so I mean, I don't mind going to baseball games and soccer games, but you know, the interest has got to be there.
You're going for the experience. If you're not a fan of something and you're going, you're going to take your girlfriend because it's a nice night and you can be outside, or you're going to go because it's bobblehead day or fridge magnet day or insult the Queen of England day or whatever the hell it is. It's a fun day, Jay. Trust me. When next year at the Impact, like insult the Queen of England day, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
She's going to drop the first no. Look, I had a good time, Tom, when I went to the Impact last year. It was the first time I'd ever gone. I had to drag myself there, and I had a wonderful time. And I'm not a soccer guy either, but I thought that the product was superior. I thought that they offer a really good in-game experience. No seat is a bad seat. And that, more than anything, made me go, okay, I could go and watch minor league baseball in the summertime. Because I know it's called Major League Soccer, but, I mean, just because you call it something doesn't make it so.
Yeah.
It's not Major League Soccer when you compare it to any other country in the world. Yeah. Then it's minor league soccer. And that's fine. That's fine. And that's a wonderful example of a branding exercise. I had a good time in an Impact game.
Mm.
So I'd go back. And hopefully, if people can feel that way about baseball, but it's so far away. And for me, I think you need to get people interested in the grassroots of baseball, the lower levels, get more people playing baseball, have it be part of the culture. Otherwise, it's very difficult to try and get people on board with it. If kids grow up playing soccer, they're not going to want baseball to come back. So we talk about how this could be a 25-year deal. In 25 years, there's going to be less kids playing baseball than there are now. And already now, it's dropped significantly from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the reality of it, though.
Tom, I hope you don't mind that we talk so much baseball on this show.
Not at all. You know what? I tune in for a reason.
Good. Thank you, sir.
And it's
very welcome.
Good night.
You know, it's a funny thing. It's full circle. You want people to be interested in having a Major League Baseball team by creating kind of a grassroots where they know about the game. Well,
yeah.
Well, there's a flip side to that. How are they going to start being interested in the grassroots of the game without having a Major League franchise?
Chicken and egg, right?
Chicken and egg. It goes both ways.
Well, part of that is embracing Canada's team.
The who?
Canada's team.
No. Nobody cares. Okay. Nobody in Montreal is going to care about the Blue Jays.
Okay,
it's not going
to
happen.
Can I throw out a hypothetical for you?
Yes.
October 20th happens to be my birthday, but October 20th, game one of the World Series, Toronto versus Washington. Then will Montreal get on board with it? What hurts less? The Nationals winning the World Series or Canada's team winning the World Series? Or do you just flip the channel and thank goodness that the Habs are playing next October? Probably that, right?
I think a lot of people will do that. I mean, we have to be realistic about it.
Okay.
The only way, and I truly believe that, the whole chicken and egg scenario, the only way that these kids are going to grow up being interested in baseball is by having a major league team. It's unfortunate, but that's the way. Do you know why?
But every other province in this country is going to be on board with the Blue Jays, especially if they win 90 plus games.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean,
do you really think it's going to jump? You really think it's going to be like everywhere in this country that in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia they're going to be cheering on the Blue Jays? In Quebec, they're just not going to give a damn about baseball, and then from Ontario all the way out to Clackwood Sound.
If Toronto makes it to the World Series and even a good playoff run, you're going to see a good part of the population. They'll be showing up at the pub.
I know.
They'll be watching every game.
I already see more hats, more Blue Jays stuff
sure,
around town.
You see it all the time. Everybody's jumping on that bandwagon
because it looks
like they're a threat.
How do you not cheer for R.A. Dickey?
Right.
This is good. It's hard for the jaded, jilted Montreal baseball fan to see it, but it's good for baseball in Canada that there is high-quality baseball being played in Canada. And it does nothing but benefit the province of Quebec that the Blue Jays are good. I know it's a bit of a jump and people have trouble with it, but it's actually good for the future of baseball in this
province.
Well,
I see more young kids wearing a Blue Jays hat.
That's
more
good.
Than I see older. I mean, because guys like me and you, and I say, well, maybe not you, but me, I'm not going to put on a Blue Jays cap. I'm not going to do it.
I wear a Mets cap.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be a Blue Jays fan. The Blue Jays.
I need to wear a hat from a mediocre baseball team. I can't. It's the only thing I can do.
Yeah.
I can't pick a winner.
No, don't pick a winner.
And you know, the Jays, like, I'm looking forward to watching them. I can't wait to really watch them thoroughly. Like, I want to watch a lot of Blue Jays games this year. But I'll say the same thing I've always said. I'm not going to be a fan because I'm not going to feel the lows. I might feel happy when they win, but I'm not going to care if they lose. I'm going to continue on with my night and be happy. And if the Jays lost, the Jays lost. And if they won, great.
And that's actually a testament to how long it's been getting now since the Expos have been gone. You see young kids who are legitimate. They're from Montreal. They're baseball fans. They're young kids that play baseball. And they're wearing Blue Jays caps because they never saw the Expos. So I see it all the time. And if the Blue Jays did make a playoff run, you're going to see those kids out cheering on the Blue Jays. You're going to see even some older people who are patriotic Canadians cheering for the Blue Jays. And then next year it starts all over again and nobody cares again.
Rinse, lather, repeat.
That's how it is. Chicken and egg.
That hair, it's so silky and manageable.
I want eggs right now.
Do you?
Yeah.
Not chicken?
Go home and have some breakfast.
We could go to Cass Croot for a late night burger.
The Cass Croot?
Yeah.
Go over to the Cass Croot. That's how Buck Martinez was here. We're going over to the Cass Croot.
Well, you just threw in a little Edward G. Robinson for measure. Yeah. We're going to go to Cass Croot.
But he does a little bit. I got to work on that impression.
Every week, a new impression.
There's Jose Bautista.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
The last week was a brief Jack. The week before was
so happy
was the Salikas, which yeah. I mean that killed it.
He's 0-3 today here in Dunedin. It's a cold night. I don't know.
Boy,
you turn into Ebenezer Scrooge.
Why, it's Christmas Day, sir.
What time is it, Kaufman?
It's late. We just went a half an hour over.
Okay. I'm starting to lose it.
We're forever in Jimmy's debt for it. And,
yes, thank you, Jimmy.
I want to thank John Kakalakis, too. Before you start the music, Jimmy, just give me a second. I want to thank all our guests.
Did you see how fast you went to them? They are ready? Okay. This is it.
Patrick Burke, again, I said it at the end, but I don't know where that guy fits in the hours in the day to do what he does and to do it so well. And I admire him so much. I'm humbled by the work he does.
And to do with such charisma and always in a good mood, ready to joke around, and he had a hell of a busy day today.
He was doing media appearances nonstop. I sent out a tweet at 9 o'clock this morning saying, looking forward to having Burke EYCP on the show tonight. And he sent me a direct message saying, hey, can't wait for tonight. Be sure to ask me about Bergevin. Like, the guy's just, he's awesome. And I feel very fortunate that we all got to listen to him tonight. Bugs Burnett, one of the best around, and I can't wait for April to roll around, and Bugs will come in and talk some baseball with us. And, you know, every time we have Bugs on, we learn something new. So look forward to bringing him in studio and finding out something else. Goodness, Dave Zirin, we love you. That's all I can say about that. It was supposed to happen, and sometimes, you know, like my favorite song says, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need. And we'll thank Brian Wild, who is a gentleman, a scholar, and a very good friend to this show. And you know what? All that talk about baseball, it all comes down to one thing, and it's the thing that we end our show on every single week, which is that we love this town.
Not what you think. Stayed out too late. Had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
Been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?